Knowledge Fight. Dan and Jordan, I am sweating. KnowledgeFight.com. It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight. I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan. Knowledge Fight.
Need money. Stop it. Andy in Kansas. Andy, it's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a Christian caller. I'm a huge fan.
I love your work.
Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes. Like to sit around, drink novelty beverages, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Indeed we are, Dan.
Jordan.
Dan?
Jordan.
Have you ever had an electrical appliance explode on you?
When my house burned down a few years ago, when I went back into the apartment, like we were able to go and like see,
right.
My oven had like exploded.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's the only like visceral memory.
Yeah, you've never had anything like actually happen.
I've had a blender over like, you know, like stuff
explode
out the top of it because I was using it wrong.
Yeah, yeah, the blowhole method.
Yeah. But I don't know. I don't think so. Or at least if I have, it doesn't stick out in my head.
Nothing like man. I was because I had a toaster oven that my grandparents bequeathed me.
Mm-hmm.
That was made in like the 60s, and I used it 2 years ago. I had just moved in with my partner,
yeah.
And it just exploded. It just started up on fire.
It's terrifying.
I thought everybody had like some experience like that, like a TV exploding or something like that.
Not that I can remember. If it did, it didn't leave a mark on me.
Right.
This is not interesting conversation, so I'm going to pivot the subject matter to something I want to talk about.
I think that's a good
idea.
That
is that recently I started playing the new Luigi's Mansion game.
Why didn't I ask that question?
Yeah. I had a lot of thoughts about it.
I knew you had just gotten it. Damn it.
Luigi's Mansion 3.
Yeah.
I started playing it. It's been very emotionally resonant, I would say.
Oh, really?
Well, kind of. I mean, it's very nostalgic because Luigi's Mansion was like one of the first games that I played as an adult on like video game systems. Because I played like Mega Man and the Mario games and Donkey Kong Country.
All fantastic.
As a youth.
Yes.
But then there was a little bit of a break from video games. And like when the GameCube came out, my buddies had it. And
right.
That Luigi's Mansion was one of the launch titles. And I fucking loved it. I loved running around with the vacuum sucking up ghosts.
Naturally, yeah.
It was a lot of fun. And I wasn't able to play Luigi's Mansion 2 because it wasn't on a system that I had.
Right.
And so
you weren't a Make-A-Wish kid, so you couldn't just get it. Yeah.
No, I was not in any shape to get a 3DS. So I never like was able to play it. I was like, I heard the third one was coming out. I'm like, I'm so excited about this.
Yeah.
And so I got it, and I'm playing it, and I started to realize, I mean, it's very aesthetically pleasing. And
oh, no. Tell me you're having fun. And
oh, absolutely.
Okay, good. No, I was going to say, if this is a negative story, I think I'm going to cry, Dan.
No.
Told me about Luigi's
Mansion.
It's
fun. I'm enjoying it quite a bit. I'm trying to take it slow, you know, like so I don't just play it in a day or two.
Right.
Not a lot of replay value in some games like this.
Right.
But it dawned on me as I was playing it, they're like, man, this is a lot about money. Like,
okay.
You're going around this mansion that's haunted, and you got to like suck up the ghosts and everything. But along the way, you're like banging on trash cans and like, you know, trying to vacuum up the walls because sometimes dollar bills will fly out at you in coins. And I realized
no.
that this is a grossly super money interested game.
Yeah.
I remembered the first one kind of like at the end after you beat the game, it rates you based on how much money and gems you found along the way, and that determines what size mansion you end up with at the end of the game.
I am not looking forward to the Jacobin review of this video game.
I realize like this is I'd forgotten how deeply involved finances were
That's
in the
so
Luigi's
weird.
Mansion game. And I was like, this is a strange thing for a video game. But then I realized, like, all the Mario games, you're running around collecting coins.
Yeah, of course.
There's
something weird about the dollar bill, though.
That is true.
That's the weirder
thing.
And
the, like, bars of gold. Like,
yeah.
Things that are, but I mean, we have coins in the real world.
Of course, yeah,
there
of
are
course.
Direct analogs
of course,
to it.
Of course, but the dollar bill is still weird to see in a video game. You're just not programmed for it.
Well, because I think that what you're thinking is, like, someone had to print these dollar bills.
Well, of course.
But at the same time, those coins have imprints on them that
Mario runs around catching,
you know? So,
that's,
like, someone print the
I want to know who's in charge of the treasury in Waluigi. Game. They're Luigi's Mansion.
So far, I've not run into Waluigi. I don't know if he's in the game, but I think he needs to be.
Yeah.
the perfect opportunity to throw Waluigi into the mansion.
He's a fucking Stalinist. He's going in there. He's like, money is for evil.
It would be interesting.
That would be interesting.
So anyway, that was just a stray thought I had along the way playing Luigi's Mansion. I know a lot about Luigi's Mansion and a ton about Alex Jones.
And I don't know anything about either.
And that's the fun we have on this here show, that imbalance of information. So, Jordan, today we're going to be in the present. We're going to be looking at November 5th and 6th, 2019, because Alex Jones got buck wild, did some stupid shit.
Yeah, I even haven't been able to avoid some of this
stuff.
Yeah,
it's pretty much all over the news.
Yeah.
As everyone knows, Alex Jones revealed the name of someone he believes to be a juror in Roger Stone's trial.
Right.
We'll get into the dynamics of that, the legality questions surrounding it, and why, no matter what the situation is, he's still fucking stupid. And we'll get to that here in a moment. But before we do, Jordan, we got to take a moment to say thank you to some people who have signed up and are supporting the show. So first, I don't know if this is the celebrity.
Oh, boy.
I don't know if it's the celebrity.
It can't Maybe be Iggy Azalea.
No, it is not. It is Tay Diggs. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you so much, Tay
thank
Diggs.
Thank you, the most handsome man ever.
Thank you so much, Jacob, the second most handsome man ever. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you so much, Jacob. Next, professional wizard. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much, professional wizard.
Yeah. Yes. Next, Jack. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks so much, Jack. Next, Sarah. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Sarah. And finally, I'd like to say thank you to a couple people who signed up on an elevated level. We appreciate that very much. So, Miles, thank you so much. You are now a technocrat. And Liz, thank you so much. You are also now a wonderful technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk.
Crikey, mate, that's fantastic. Have yourself a brew.
How's your 401k doing, bro?
We got to go full tilt boogie on this, Watson, all right?
Let's just get down to business. We ain't making that money off that heroin. Why you pimp so good? My neck is freakishly large.
I declare info war on you.
Thank you so much, Miles and Liz.
Yes, thank you very much.
If you're out there listening and you're thinking, hey, I enjoyed this show, I'd like to support what these gents do, you can do that by going to our website, knowledgefight.com, clicking the button that says support the show. We would appreciate it very much.
It would be lovely.
So, like I said, the big news we'll get to as we get to it, that right. Alex Jones is trying to meddle in the affairs of the courts.
Right.
This is a classic thing on the InfoWars circuit,
right?
Let's say.
Of course.
That every time there is a big thing that Alex Jones does, oftentimes, if you watch the entire show, you find that there's like, oh, there's a number of other things you guys probably should have pointed out here.
Yeah.
There's a whole lot of things that debatably are worse.
Yeah. No, we've done that a few times where it's like, oh, Alex Jones caught committing a crime, and then in the same episode, he starts peeing on a chicken, and you're like, why isn't anybody talking about that?
Well, A's llama's in the studio, and he commits treason.
Yeah, exactly. What are you guys doing?
Everyone's talking about the goddamn llamas. All right. And we'll see. There's a number of things that are like really important points in his coverage over the course of this that have nothing to do with Roger Stone's situation. But that's not to minimize the Roger Stone thing. That is absolutely important. You know, that's and like I said, we'll discuss it all. So we're going to start on November 5th here. And Alex begins his show searching for the top story. What is the top story?
Okay.
I don't know if I agree with where he lands.
Ladies and gentlemen, I sat here this morning since I got here at 9 a.m. pondering all the news, all the clips, all the guests, all the information we were about to be covering and just thinking, what is our top story? Because it's more important than just what is the biggest news, what's the most interesting news. What out of this spectrum is most important? It's said in advertising, if you go with the world's view of advertising, that perception is reality. Well, if you're on 10 hits of LSD and you think you can fly like a bird, you jump off a 20-story balcony and hit the concrete below, you're going to die. Now, your perception is that you'd spread your wings like an eagle, like a phoenix, like a lark, like a crow.
This is a man about to commit a crime on it.
You just hit the ground and became buzzard food. That's the only birds we've got that are going to be feeding on you. Okay. Perception is not reality. What actually is and what works and what replicates and what succeeds.
So what's the top story?
Is reality. Life is reality. The universe is reality.
So his top story appears to be that there is an objective reality. that is big news.
Oh boy, that was good stuff.
Top that story today. Reality exists.
That was good stuff, man. It's been a while. I needed that.
I was listening to that and I'm like, this show is not going to go anywhere good. if in minute one of his show he's like, where do I begin? Well, let's establish that reality is something that exists.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. So Alex gets from there. Now that we've established that things are real.
Reality, unless you're taking LSD.
Yes, but then reality is still real, but your perception will be different than reality. Ah. So perception is not reality.
But I heard him say that perception is reality.
No, advertisers say
that. Oh, okay. All right.
You need to listen.
I was stuck on the birds eating me. That's where I got into trouble.
When the teacher is teaching class, the student listens. So Alex goes from there, and he jumps to some stories that he's got about cartel murders. There have been some U.S. citizens that were killed by cartel members recently.
Right, the Mormon ones? Or
yes.
Yeah.
And Alex gets into this story, and he believes that it's a cover-up. Then I'm going to discuss what my initial theory was about that,
okay,
with the caveat that everything I'm about to say is not correct.
For you, at least 9 people, including 6 children, were killed in an ambush by a Mexican drug cartel. Now, this happened in the northern state of Sonora. Police believe the attack to be a case of mistaken identity. Members of the cartel opened fire on a convoy of 3 SUVs that were part of the Church of Latter-day Saints. There are 13 people missing as of news time. While no identities have been released so far, a witness at the scene says some of the victims were his family members, including his wife's cousin, twins, 6-month-old babies, an 8-year-old, and a 10-year-old. The National Police and military forces are heading there to defend the area. Any update?
So that's mainstream news trying to whitewash and defend what happened as it was being reported last night and this morning. Now they're having to admit, it was targeted. They were targeted, including 9-month-old babies killed at point-blank range after they were kidnapped.
So when I heard him say that they were targeted,
yeah,
I 100% that he was talking about. There was a story in the New York Post that came out that discussed how this group, these Mormons that were down in Mexico, they had connections to the Nexium sex cult.
How?
Yeah.
What?
According to this New York Post story, quote, the outpost Mormon community in Mexico is where underlings of the Nexium cult leader Keith Raniere recruited young women to work as nannies in an upstate New York compound run by the accused cult.
So the Nexium recruited Mormons.
No, they used the Mormons to recruit young women in Mexico that would then be sent to upstate New York to work at this compound. According to the New York Post is reporting that, and that information is coming from a man named Mark Vincent, who was hired to make a documentary about Nexium. So I don't know how much. He is a fully accurate source, but he certainly had some exposure
to
the group.
That's wild, if true.
I'm not entirely sure, but I thought that's what Alex was talking about. And like, I just sort of like was like, I expected that to be the angle he goes down, and it's not.
Oh.
So I had this whole thing prepared about why that's stupid, and then I now just have to throw it out.
Because that's not even
at all what he's talking about.
No.
But when you start looking into the case, you see that somebody is reporting this connection with the Nexium.
Sure.
Like, that's
so
got to be where Alex
has
goes.
To have seen one thing there, and now we've got it.
Yeah, it seems like it would be a perfect way for him to tell this story.
Right.
It's like, you got to angle in here. But it's not. And we'll get to what it's actually about here in a moment. But after those murders, Trump had a pretty strong but possibly too aggressive response. He called on Mexico to declare war on the cartels, to which Mexican President Andres Manuel López Obrador said, quote, the worst thing you can do is have war. We declared war and it didn't work. This is not an option.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I'm in a position where I can tell Mexico how to solve its problems, so I'm not going to try. At the same time, I definitely understand Trump's response. And it's the sort of thing where you have to take it seriously when U.S. citizens are being killed abroad.
Now, yeah, for sure.
Now, to the extent
unless
that
you are the ones killing them, in which case, yeah.
To the extent that he might be doing that selectively, maybe you could make an argument that that's the case. But I don't really care to make that argument as a way to sort of like, what about all these other people who were killed?
Yeah, I don't.
I don't really know if that's a super worthwhile line to go down.
Yeah.
I don't really know what to say here. I think this is an awful piece of news that's come out. and I don't particularly care to try and make it anything other than that. The tragedy that we need to be doing more to try and avoid having repeat.
Yeah.
Whatever the best strategy towards that is.
Yeah.
I would say that probably having a all-out war with a cartel is probably not the best strategy.
I don't know. I've been alive for 32 years, and in that time, I can think of America winning every war that it started. I'm pretty sure that every
Alex
war
might believe that.
That the United States has been involved in, they have completely won, right?
Yeah.
I think wars are smart.
So I had that in my head that's like, oh, he's going to get into this Nexium shit.
Yeah.
That's right in his wheelhouse. Then he starts talking a little bit more, and I realize, nah, I'm fucking stupid.
Oh, the Mormons got killed in a crossfire. Now, if you watch documentaries about Mexico, a lot of Mormons went down there in the 40s and 50s and 60s to proselytize, you know, like missionaries do. And they won't pay tribute to the cartels. And they get killed. And there's been Mormon vigilantes, not this group, in other areas, that support the towns and arm the people. And there's been documentaries made about it. So they were targeted. But, oh, brown people never target white people.
Oh, God. That's yep. That's you're right.
Because only white people ever do wrong.
Should've
seen that
coming.
Actually taught in the public schools, in the universities. Whites are inherently evil.
I completely blew it with my initial assumption of the Nexium connection.
You know what? That one's on me, too. Yep. I was thinking he was going somewhere else, and then now it's just too obvious.
It's just a fucking race
thing.
It's too
obvious. Yep. It's
absolutely.
Too obvious.
Yep.
I was like, holy shit, there are Mormon vigilantes? There's going to be a Mormon yeah. vigilante cartel war? We're not even going to have to worry about getting the government involved? Nope, it's just brown people killing white. Great, whatever. Yep.
One day I'll learn my lesson and stop trying to understand what he might be saying and just assume that it's all rooted in his deep white identity
yeah.
leanings. That's
yeah.
I really need to learn that lesson eventually.
You know, you just don't see it coming.
I constantly give the benefit of the doubt that it's about something else. And
right.
then, oh, no.
Nope.
All right.
Nope.
Mormons didn't start going to Mexico to proselytize in the 30s. It was more like the 1870s. Many of them did go down there to do charity and missionary shit, but a whole lot of them also were running from the United States, where polygamy was outlawed. Mormons have had a very healthy presence in Mexico for a long time. In 2014, they reported having 24 missions and 13 temples in Mexico, with over 1.2 million members in their congregation in the country. The issues related to the Mormon presence in Mexico is complicated, and I'm not sure I can credibly discuss all of those issues. But what I can do is say that Alex has absolutely zero reason to turn this into a race thing. Even if everything he's saying is correct, and that these people were targeted by the cartel because Mormons in Mexico have a history of standing up to cartels, that still has nothing to do with their race. It would maybe have something to do with their religion, but that's not really a fair assessment to say that all Mormons are white. While Pew Research put the number at 85% of U.S. Mormons being white in a 2014 release, the same is not true internationally. It's a pretty common thing to hear from LDS folks that conversion rates in Europe and the United States are not growing. And one of the only things that's keeping the church alive is Latinx converts. And eventually, that will be reflected in the U.S. Mormon demographics as well. From 2000 to 2010, the number of Spanish-language churches went from 377 to 760. It is a community that is massively
but
on the
Mormon churches.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Specifically
yeah, yeah.
Mormon
yes,
churches.
Yes,
not
yes, yes,
yeah,
yes.
yeah, yeah, yeah.
What Alex is doing here is equating the Mormonness of the victims of this crime with their whiteness, which is kind of a racist thing to do. He could make the argument that these people were targeted because they were Mormon, Mormons who were disrupting the cartel's ability to operate, and we could talk about that as a possibility. I'm not really sure if that's true. It possibly could be. I don't know. But as long as he's discussing that as a theory and not proven fact, I would probably just say, whatever.
Yeah.
But that's not what he's doing. He's taking the argument that they were targeted because they were Mormons as definitively proven, then swapping out white for Mormon in order to take this story of 9 murdered U.S. citizens and turn it into fuel for his white identity outrage cycle. This is disgusting. It's super disrespectful to the victims of this crime. And honestly, a very clear example of how racist his mind is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So Alex starts rambling around about free will existing. We now know reality exists. And also, as an offshoot of that, free will exists. And then he just starts talking some shit.
Free will exists, and so evil exists because we have the power to make bad choices and rebel against God and God's creation and the laws of the universe. Now, that said, Joy Behar is a piece of work. I don't tell this story to name drop or act cool. It's actually quite embarrassing. Joy Behar, I was on The View, and I was bashing George W. Bush and the globalists, because Bush was a globalist too. Once Obama got in, they got confused. They're so dumb, they think, because I was bashing Bush and illegal wars and fake WMDs, that I was a leftist. No, no, no. And then Obama came in and was even worse. Launched more wars. It came after the guns even more. I mean, George W. Bush signed the assault weapons ban. I would have arguments in gun shops with conservatives that didn't even know that. Then she had me on her CNN show, a tape show, that afternoon, and hit on me. She's an older woman, even back then. This was like 12, 13, I guess 14, 15 years ago. She goes, oh, you're really good looking. You want to, what are you doing later? And she's like, I really love what you're doing. I was like, you could tell this woman's had some fun in her life. And I wasn't attracted to her, but it was interesting to still, you know, have an older woman coming on to me like that.
Very interesting. So anyway, Alex is mad that Joy Behar on The View said something to the effect of, like, you know, Beto dropped out of the race. And so she's like, you don't tell people you're going to take their guns. Wait till you're in office. That kind of thing.
It's right, like, right.
Well, okay. I understand why this would trigger Alex.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
she's also a comedian. So
right.
She's not advancing specific policy as much as she is talking shit on The View.
That's her job.
Yeah. So, but
word
Alex,
for word.
Alex thinks that she's straight up a think tank writing policy proposals that people just copy and paste into bills.
Of course.
So he's offended at that, so he decides to get on air and say that she tried to fuck him.
Man, you know, I know a lot of that type of dude that's like, hey, what name any person, and they'll have like a story of like, hey, man, when I was back
we
then,
almost.
She came on to me and was like, no, she did not.
Yeah.
You rewrote that in your memory to make it sound like you weren't a dick.
It's a possibility that there's that rewriting that goes on. But it's also a possibility that, Alex just perceives that to be the case.
Oh, no, I think so.
Like, maybe every person is trying to fuck him, and every man wants to fight him unsuccessfully.
Yes, absolutely.
That's good. It's a healthy, this is a family show where Alex is talking about Joy Behar trying to have sex with him 15 years ago.
Yeah.
As a way of sort of invalidating her.
Yeah.
You know, that's also another element of it that's really fucked up.
Yeah, she doesn't have anything important to say because one time she came on to me.
Yeah. So Alex gets into now talking about, he has like almost an entire segment of the show, you know, a whole break-to-break rant about how we need to reach out to these brain-dead people.
Sure.
These people who are against guns, and we need to reach out to them.
Okay.
They're all fooled.
Okay.
And it takes us to a familiar place.
All right.
They've been inducted into a fraud, and as they get deeper and deeper, they get more frantic, more upset that the fake degrees aren't paying off and the system isn't putting them in charge. They were supposed to be the ruling class, the priesthood. But instead, all they got was student debt. You've got to explain to them that they've been abused, like someone that signs on to a Nigerian email scam.
Oh, man.
And then more they get the first money, and then the people don't want to admit they've been conned, and they sucker them for more money. And like a degenerate gambler, sometimes people pay the Nigerians 10, 15 payments, because once they're in $100,000, they don't want to admit they got conned to themselves or their neighbors or anybody else. They're in denial.
I think evidence just keeps mounting that Alex fell for that Nigerian email.
Yeah, I didn't even know you could go to more than two payments.
Uh-huh.
I never knew. I thought it was one payment, then they went away. They'll come back?
Yeah, that's weird.
That's crazy.
Also, Alex, I don't know if the Nigerian scam works in such a way where they do pay out the first, like the people running the email scam.
Not that
pay
I understand.
Off.
No.
They give you that money, but then they're like, we need more money. So what, do you just send that money back to them?
I don't know.
It's very strange.
Yeah.
Whatever the case, I believe Alex was probably tricked by this.
100%.
This email. He is so singularly focused on it. Like there's a very, it's strange.
Yeah.
It's strange.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So Alex talks about those nine citizens who were killed in Mexico. And then there's another story about a New Hampshire couple that was found dead on, like, Padre Island.
Mm.
They were found buried in the beach. And Alex is connecting these stories. And maybe he shouldn't.
The fact that a lot of tourists won't go to Padre Island now because hundreds and hundreds are coming up missing, including children. But the media tries to cover it up because it's hurting tourism. Well, it's all going to end up shutting down anyways, like it's done in Mexico, until we stop it. And so President Trump has declared war on it. That's how these deceptions kill people. They don't want you armed, so you can't protect yourself. You know, if you're coming down from New Hampshire, I know it's pretty safe to go camping in New Hampshire. It's pretty safe to go camping in West Texas or East Texas or North Texas. You don't go camping a few miles from the Mexico border in one of the most dangerous areas in the world unless you want to die. So let me give you a public service announcement. If you don't have a gun, get one and learn how to use it. And if you and your wife are going to be parked out in the dunes next to Mexico, you better have your door locked and you better have an AR-15 ready to start killing. Because there's a good chance you camp out enough times, they're coming and they're going to tie you up and they're going to get your bank codes off your credit cards. And then they're going to put you down on your knees and they're going to squeeze a couple bullets in your head after they rape your wife in front of you. But it's okay because they're brown and you're white, devil. Isn't that sick?
That is sick.
Daddy, you told me this was a family show.
This is not a family show.
Holy shit.
So when Alex is talking about Padre Island, like
Jesus,
I said.
Cormac McCarthy, fuck off.
He's talking about James and Michelle Butler, a couple from New Hampshire who were vacationing on Padre Island and were found dead, buried in the beach in Texas. He's taken this story and is sort of combining it with the story of the Mormons killed by the drug cartel and weaving a unified story about Mexicans killing white people and the media covering it up. As for the media covering up the Mormon story, that's absurd. It's been reported literally all over the place. If Alex's complaint is that the media isn't reporting the story as being related to his fantasies of a race war, then I guess he's going to have to just deal with that. They have reported that the police have said that it's a mistaken identity situation, and even if the reporter suspects that that's not the whole story, they have journalistic ethics to consider and uphold. Real journalists can't just throw around feelings and conjecture. Yeah. Like, hey, the police say this, but I personally don't believe it. Yeah. That's Alex's job.
I've got a hunch.
Yeah.
All right.
In terms of the Butlers from New Hampshire, Alex is very likely completely wrong about that story. The couple's bodies were discovered on October 27th, and as of the time of this recording, the case has not been fully solved. But on November 4th, police released pictures of persons of interest in the killing. They were caught on surveillance cameras when they tried to cross the border in the Butler's car, which they had stolen. The driver of the car appears to be a Caucasian man, who the police identified as Adam Curtis Williams, when they put out a warrant for his arrest on the 5th. The warrant is for suspicion of felony theft, so it might be a situation where they just suspect him of taking the car, but it seems unlikely that in this case the theft and murder wouldn't be related.
Ooh, look, free car!
But who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know what is going on for sure. I don't know that this Williams character is the murder suspect. Yeah. But it does seem pretty well established that he was photographed in the Butler's car after the murders heading for Mexico.
Man, you know what that means? It has nothing to do with where you're from. It's where you are. The border makes people kill, Dan. It has nothing to do. They're fucking ghosts.
You have an
interesting
theory.
Possessing people around that area.
I would like to remind you.
That makes perfect sense now.
I would like to remind you that perception is not reality.
Okay, all right. Well, I've got a hunch, though.
So what's going on is there's zero evidence that this is a case where there is a Mexican perpetrator.
Right.
That's something that Alex is entirely imagining, based on his feelings that there was violence done against white people in the vicinity of Mexico, so it must have been done by Mexicans. This is a pure expression of his overt racism, in a case where available evidence directly contradicts his racist assumptions. By the time he's on air here that we're listening to, it's the 5th,
yeah.
And the photos of Williams driving the Butler's car had been released the day before.
Yeah.
This is entirely unacceptable for him to be getting on air and agitating, like, you know, hey, it's fine because they're brown and you're white, devil.
Yeah.
This is explicitly deeply racist.
It reminds me so much of, I can't remember, but it was, I'm pretty sure it was something by Faulkner, where the guy is just reading the morning paper and there's just like a man still on the loose thing and he just turns and looks and he just said, probably an N-word, and then just moves on. And you're like, yeah, that's racism right there. You've got no information. You're just like, yep, this supports my racism.
It's even worse because there is information that's available. And if he knew anything about the case, he should know that there is a suspect who's wanted that the police have put out a warrant for by the time he's on air. Like, he has every reason to not have these narratives. He has reality is not perception, Jordan. That's his top story.
Yeah.
That there is a reality.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he's just trying to create a racist
it's
perception.
It's the reality that I perceive, though.
Okay. So that rant, I believe, is profoundly racist.
Yeah.
Here's what happens directly after it.
And they're going to squeeze a couple bullets in your head after they rape your wife in front of you. But it's okay because they're brown and you're white, devil. Isn't that sick? But don't worry. The cartels raped the poor Hispanics as well and everybody else they get their hands on because the evil is spreading.
Is that?
And we're here fighting, ladies and gentlemen, because of your support. But I got to
tell
you, we're supporting you. We're in this together. And InfoWars has proven we're dedicated.
Thank you.
And aren't backing down. And I want to encourage everybody to go to InfoWarsStore.com right now and get great supplements and great products you already need. Store-wide free shipping, double Patriot points, 40 to 70% off.
Gross.
Yep. The cartel's evil is spreading and they're going to rape your wife and then shoot you.
And it's fine because they're brown and you're white, devil.
It's fine because they're brown and you're white, devil.
Please go to my store.
I'm going to need some more money from you. He's like a coin-operated racism machine.
Yep. So Alex starts complaining about how these Proud Boys, you recall those two Proud Boys, got sentenced to 4 years in prison.
Yeah, for committing all their crimes.
Sure. Alex is pitching the narrative that they were just defending themselves against Antifa. And that's not fair at all based on, again, reality, which is not perception.
Yeah, we
which
have
is what Alex is operating off of.
And it doesn't. We've had hundreds upon hundreds of Antifa, quote, people arrested and nobody's being charged. And they've barely arrested anybody, but everybody, every Proud Boy and all that shit has done hard time.
Whatever the case is, Alex has found out that this judge in that case, he's been involved in other cases, too.
Oh,
no. Would you believe it?
What?
This isn't just a fresh judge.
What, did he fight another judge?
He did not. No, okay. No judge fights.
Okay.
But he did try another case that Alex thinks indicates that this guy is up to no good.
And you've got the very same judge who gave the Proud Boys all these years in prison, gave an admitted, convicted pedophile in New York almost no time in jail. Here's an example right here. Proud Boy sentenced to 4 years in prison for attacking protesters. Rolling Stone doesn't call them Antifa that came there to attack them, that followed them, and that threw waters a bottle at them and then attacked them. They defended themselves. No, now it's protesters. Oh, they attacked free speech people. No, it was Antifa trying to stop their free speech. Total inversion.
Ha-ha.
The same judge who had choice words for the Proud Boys gave the Orthodox Jewish man who admitted he had sex 8 times with a little boy, he gave him basically no jail time, even though he admitted it all.
To get this said right up top, nothing I'm about to say should be interpreted in any way to mean that I think that this Orthodox Jewish man, what he did was not as severe as what the Proud Boys did. I'm not interested in grading horrible things on some kind of an evilness scale like Alex is. I think they're both awful. That being said, there's a reason that Baruch Leibovitz received a lesser sentence than the Proud Boys. And that has to do with the fact that the Proud Boys pled not guilty and were found guilty, which will always result in a longer sentence for you. The two Proud Boys who were found guilty were sentenced to 4 years in prison, but they weren't the only Proud Boys arrested after that gang fight in New York. Two of them took plea deals and only received community service. Others pled guilty and received sentences ranging from 40 weekends, where they're released to go to work during the week and all that, up to 3 months in prison. Like, the people who cooperated and were like, yeah, we were in a fucking, we were trying to start a riot.
We were assholes.
Yeah. Generally speaking, admitting your guilt to a crime you definitely committed is seen as a sign of possible penitence. It's often interpreted as an indication that you're on your way toward making amends for your misdeeds. And from a societal standpoint, it's in everyone's best interest to support that kind of behavior.
Yeah.
In reality, Baruch Leibovitz accepted a deal where he pled guilty and was sentenced to 2 years in prison. He'd already served 13 months, so most estimates say that he's only going to be in prison a further 3 more months. This could be interpreted as a 3-month sentence, but in reality, it's a 2-year sentence, which had already been about half served.
Yeah.
I don't know enough about the Leibovitz case to comment on it really at all, or whether or not he should be in prison longer, but I know enough about these two stories to tell you that the reason that the Proud Boys got slightly, relatively longer sentences is because they took their chances on a trial and blew it. That's all that's going on here.
Yeah.
Alex is trying to turn it into a thing where this judge is like, ha ha, I love pedophiles, yeah, and I'll let them go. But fuck the Proud Boys. And that's just not the case.
Yeah, I have
also,
no interest
I'm not entirely sure if the judge was the one who determined the sentences. I'm not entirely sure if it wasn't the thing where the prosecution requested this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's possible.
So I don't know. But whatever the case, Alex is just making shit up.
I have no interest in any right-wing arguments about sentencing disparities.
They're often ring false.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you know this, Jordan, but climate change.
What about it?
I know that you
is in full recession, and we're finally getting back to normal.
You don't know anything about this.
Fair. Is true.
Climate change is not real.
Okay.
It is just a ploy in order to get carbon taxes. We all know that.
Hey, my brother told me that Obama bought some property in Florida, so we all know that.
Alex has talked about that a couple times.
Yeah.
But climate activism, just about carbon taxes.
Absolutely.
We know this. This is a consistent piece of Alex's rhetoric.
It's all we
has
want.
Been for a very long time.
You got it.
Now, what's interesting is if you pay attention to this clip, Alex takes some of his long-standing rhetoric and completely changes it.
Climate activism will make you less lonely, says junkies.com, telling leftists who are the most alone and stupid and unhealthy and highest rate of suicide.
I'm sorry, are you quoting junkies.com?
Yeah.
All right.
just go out and protest for carbon taxes globally, pay to the world's richest, who are all exempt, and that'll save the planet. So how does this tie into the pedophiles? Where if you're the globalist pedophile rings and you're involved in all this, how are you going to sell the public on letting them track everything you do with AI and tax you for every movement you make and then exempt themselves as saviors of the planet? Well, they're going to pose as saviors of the planet. And that ties into Jeffrey Epstein. Billionaires try to shrink world's population, report says. Wall Street Journal, 12 years ago, 11 years ago, a group run by Michael Bloomberg, Ted Turner, Oprah Winfrey, George Soros, Bill Gates, David Rockefeller, run by Jeffrey Epstein. He ran the group, a secret world government group to save the planet. Oh,
I don't want to put too fine a point on this, but I've heard Alex talk about this very same group of globalist billionaires for years now. They were definitely discussed as far back as Endgame, which came out in like 2007.
Yeah.
In every incarnation of this narrative, the group has been Oprah, Bill Gates, Ted Turner, the Rockefellers, sometimes Soros, when he's realized. I got to yell about this guy.
Yeah, he's the Y in Vels. Yeah.
Sometimes Bloomberg. He's not always included.
Bloomberg has always seemed like an afterthought whenever he's added Bloomberg.
It depends on what stage of his rhetoric he's in, but it's always Bill Gates, Oprah, Ted Turner, and David Rockefeller. It literally has never involved Jeffrey Epstein. This is a completely new part of the narrative that Alex is adding because he knows that Epstein conspiracies are fucking
hot right now. Yeah, they're the summer's new winter.
I don't know who was and wasn't connected with Epstein, but I do know a whole lot about what Alex Jones has said in the past. And he never said that Epstein was involved with this group, much less running it until very recently.
Yeah, of course.
This is a very similar behavior that we've seen throughout Alex's career. He'll take hot topics from current events and he molds his rhetoric to suit them and pretend that he's always been on this case forever. He's definitely been yelling about this group he insists is dead set on depopulation forever. So if you look into it, you'll find that he did talk about them a bunch, but he's completely changing the story now. I've searched through the archives of InfoWars and Prison Planet, and there are zero stories that include the words Jeffrey Epstein on Prison Planet before January 1st, 2016.
Yeah, of course.
And there's only one on InfoWars, which is just a 2015 London Examiner article that they've reposted. If Alex knew about him as being the big player in the globalist machine, he sure as shit didn't. It doesn't seem to have left much material behind reflecting that on the website. That Wall Street Journal article Alex is citing doesn't mention Epstein at all. One of the sources for that Wall Street Journal article is another article in the Times of London, which also doesn't mention Epstein, but does tell us that the host of that meeting was Sir Paul Nurse, who is a Nobel Prize winning biochemist. putting it very bluntly, Alex is just making this shit up.
Yeah.
What Alex is doing is a cynical exploitation of a horrible story. He's taking a story that is very suspicious and twisting things so the suspicion matches his own narratives in an attempt to reinforce his self-touted ability to be 10 steps ahead of the globalists at all turns. And I find this behavior disgusting.
Yeah. In better times, I think this would be more fun.
Yeah.
Like, in this has all the classic, like, this is the conspiracy theory kind of situation where it's like, see, and then you know that it's this guy, and then, right, of course, and it's all run by Epstein, who we just saw suspiciously died, and that's my slam dunk. And in, yeah, in 2010, we're all like, ha, 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 you're crazy.
Yeah, if it's a friend and you're smoking weed, yeah, on beanbag chairs, it's a little annoying but kind of fun.
Yeah.
Now we've reached the logical conclusion of, yeah, mainstreaming this kind of dumb conspiracy theory shit.
Right.
And this is, yeah, it is not,
right,
fun.
It is. It used to be something that would be fun, and now it's like you pull out one of these conspiracy theories, and the next thing you know, six people are dead, and you're like, Jesus fucking Christ.
So in this next clip, Alex brags about his courage. He's a brave boy.
He is not.
He's a very brave boy.
He's a coward.
And he discusses how he had a moment of ecstasy that morning. And I think he says
when he ran away from his problems?
No. I think that he has a little moment here,
yeah,
that reinforces some of the theories that I've been putting forth.
Let me tell you, I have something beyond courage, and I'm not saying that to act tough. It's not courage. I'm driven to fight these people, and I'm angry if I'm not doing enough, and I never get rest. I never feel any satisfaction. Just more, more. Get them, get them, get them, get them. The Holy Spirit pushing me. This morning about 8:30, I had like 10 minutes of ecstasy. Just envisioning their defeat and knowing we're going to win. And just the Holy Spirit was so strong saying, good, good, good. Now we're getting where we're supposed to go. Because you don't care any what happens to you now. And you're totally committed and you know we're going to win. And you're calling on my power to come down into the earth through the people. And they're doing it. And tell them to do that more. That's what you're supposed to do, Jones. Tell them to call on the Holy Spirit and on Jesus Christ, the intercessor to God. And we will defeat these Satanists. You're on the right track, Jones. You're going to be a preacher.
Oh.
Okay.
Oh.
All right. I thought he was going to re-record Ready to Die by Biggie, but apparently not.
Okay. No, he is going to be a preacher.
That sounds great.
I don't know how much to put in, put into that. Like, that could just be him riffing.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have seen pretty strong indications that Alex is becoming, while he's always been religious, way more religious. And it does seem to look like, hey, maybe he would be wise to pivot this into a completely religious grift,
yeah,
as opposed to, he's made too much trouble in the conspiracy and politics world.
I think it's time for him to bail, yeah.
It seems like you should hit that ripcord and try and scam, yeah, on that level.
And as we know with Jim Baker, you can go away. You gotta go away to come back. You gotta go away to come back, Dave.
Yeah, totally.
He can do it.
He could do it.
Yeah.
And when he says stuff like that, like, yeah, you know, God is pushing me forward. Yes, Jones, yes, you're going to be a preacher.
Yeah.
I have a difficult time knowing whether I should interpret that as like, hey, what's coming is I'm going to start grifting religiously.
Yeah.
Or if it's just like, hey, whatever you're doing now is preaching.
Yeah.
I'm not sure which it is, but it's the most clear demonstration, I think, so far that Alex sees himself as a religious leader.
Yeah, absolutely.
He has talked about that in the last couple months, too. Yeah. God is telling me to announce my leadership role.
Right.
And think, so I don't know.
It sounds more to me like when he says preacher, he means it in the like biblical prophet, that kind of like you're the pronouncer of my words,
yeah,
not necessarily a pastor.
Yeah,
the
there's
like,
some, yeah, of that, but it's hard to know for sure.
Right.
We'll see how it develops.
It could be both.
Yeah. So Alex is he's got a bee in his bonnet about how everyone is afraid of devil worshippers, but he's not. And then he starts graphically talking about murdering his enemies.
Oh, okay, great.
And it scares the daylights out of them that people are fighting back. Yeah, not everybody's just a sellout to evil. Not everybody backs down to threats. Not everybody's scared of you devil worshipers. We're actually scared of ourselves in our desire to stop you. We want to make sure we spend our will and our blood and our energy and our force making sure we eradicate your system. We don't want to just slit your throats. We don't want to just beat your head in with baseball bats. We don't want to just run ice picks in your eye sockets, give you a lobotomy, a street lobotomy. We don't want that. We want to get your spirit off this planet and out of our universe. We want you to go be with your own satanic forces. We want you out of our world. We want you out of our lives. Get behind me, Satan.
I don't know how he classifies his enemies, but this is exterminationist talk. Like, I don't know what would all Democrats eradicate Democrats from the world.
Well, everybody knows that every Democrat is a devil worshiper. He's pointed that out.
He said it over and over again.
He said it in the past. So.
All people who believe in globalism, that he
called,
you know, which is a real thing as opposed to the globalists, which is his imaginary enemies.
Right.
Everybody who believes in like globalism as a market strategy.
Yeah, well, you got to get rid of them.
Eradicate them from the earth.
Get behind me.
When you talk about killing your enemies and stuff like this, you notice he's also not saying politically.
No, we're past that.
Yeah.
Yeah, the day of that is gone.
When you talk about killing your specific political enemies, it's incredibly fucked up and totally irresponsible. When you start getting into it as classes of folks that need to be driven off the earth, we need to get rid of this from the earth, you are in a territory that... I read, what was it, in that New Yorker article, he was talking about W. Cleon Skousen, and it said that he was, that people were concerned that his rhetoric was getting dangerously close to Nazism. And I would say that you're getting dangerously close to some ideas that are abhorrent, and we just, you know, you can't have that kind of mentality where you need to eradicate your enemies from the earth.
Yeah.
Like, because especially, and I know that he's not saying that all of his enemies are Jews, right? He's not saying that. But we've talked many times about the ways that he classifies and characterizes his enemies relies largely on a lot of anti-Semitic tropes from history, whether it's the ideas surrounding the blood libel or things that he's cribbed directly from the protocols of the Elders of Zion. When you have that in addition to we need to... eradicate people from the earth, you kind of got to recognize that some people who are listening are going to hear that a particular way. Whether that's your intention or not, whatever extremists you have in your audience may hear that as a call for ethnic cleansing on some level.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. So when we talk about dangerously close to abhorrent, I think we're already there. For some reason... It seems weird that it's less offensive, that it's less targeted. Do you know what I mean? Like, because
well,
his actual...
Well, if it was specifically targeted, then we'd be having a completely different conversation.
Right. Well, if he was saying the Jews, then that's fucked up. He wants to kill this specific subset of the population. But his actual rhetoric kind of translates to him wanting to kill 75% of the world or something. So
it does kind of imply
like,
that
because like non-whites and you know, like
there isn't a strong popularity for his ideas.
No.
So the people that would end up being classified as his enemies would be a lot of people.
So, pretty much everybody.
So that is a problem.
So it is like somehow it feels less abhorrent because he's an equal opportunity, wants to destroy the whole fucking planet guy.
Right. There is some of that, but I think it's also, you know, you can't lose sight of the fact that because of that sort of vagueness, because of the broad and, you know, open to interpretation aspect of it,
right?
You run the risk of whatever your audience is bringing to the table, that confirming something really bad in them.
Oh, absolutely.
So let's say it's somebody who hates Mexicans. You could be like,
well, Mexicans are devil worshippers.
Sure.
It's not my fault. Have you seen their Halloween or whatever? Maybe that's their Christmas. I don't know.
Or you could be someone who's really opposed to taxes.
Have you seen the government? They're devil worshippers. Have you seen their Halloween or Christmas? I don't know which one it is.
And then you could confirm the belief that we must eradicate all of these people. It's just irresponsible. Whenever you have a platform like this, you need to be very mindful of the things that you express. And when you're expressing, We need to do more than kill these people.
Yeah.
We need to wipe them off the earth. You can't talk like that.
I don't understand how. I mean, I understand how. I don't get like the person that can say in terrorizing you like, hey, they're going to rape your wife in front of you and then shoot you in the head twice, and then not find himself being the bad guy in the, I don't want to just bash your brains out with a baseball bat. I don't want to just kill you. I don't want to just do that. Like, you're the bad guy.
Well, it's because,
you know,
it's because his worldview is so, such an underpinning of it is the constant defensive violence.
Right, everything
that he wants to do only is
retaliation.
Justified.
Retaliation gives me carte blanche to do anything.
Bingo.
Yeah. I understand that.
It's nonsense. So Alex also has James O'Keefe on the show on the 5th to talk about his big new scoop. But honestly, it's a very short drop-in, and it's just Alex begging for more details about what James has coming up, and James saying, "Hey, stay tuned." He's not giving him any.
Yeah. Not even a teaser.
It's kind of a teaser, but in the sense that there is no information. It's more or less just a commercial for Project Veritas. And James is such a fucking piece of shit. I don't have any clips of him, and I don't care. Recently, Project Veritas released a video of ABC News' Amy Robach saying that she had interviewed Epstein victim Virginia Roberts in 2015, but that ABC didn't let the story go to air. The way this video is presented, it lends the appearance that the people at ABC were trying to squash the story and that this was a cover-up. It's easy to come away with that impression, but if you're listening to this show, then you should know by now, no matter what, you are a sucker if you believe Project Veritas. After the video was released, Robach clarified her comments, saying, quote, "I was upset that an important interview I had conducted with Virginia Roberts didn't air because we couldn't obtain sufficient corroborating evidence to meet ABC's editorial standards about her allegations. My comments about Prince Andrew and her allegation that she had seen Bill Clinton on Epstein's private island were in reference to what Virginia Roberts said in that interview in 2015. I was referencing her allegations, not what ABC News had verified through our reporting. The interview itself, while I was disappointed it didn't air, didn't meet our standards. In the years since, no one has ever told me or the team to stop reporting on Epstein. I can't tell you how many people I saw who I thought knew better retweeting that shit and saying, well, I guess Project Veritas got one right. It's incredibly depressing that people don't recognize that bad faith actors aren't suddenly doing the Lord's work because they're saying something that's closer in line to what you want to believe or what you think is right or accurate. Project Veritas lies. That's what they do. It's their entire business model. Right-wing agitation based on taking things out of context to conform to a narrative. I know that everything around Epstein is very suspicious, and further competent investigations and reporting has to be done on that story. That is just never going to come from James O'Keefe. There's another aspect to this that deserves mention, and that is that James O'Keefe doesn't give a fuck about the Epstein story. He's doing this to attack the media. This entire thing is about attacking the institutions that have rightly excluded him and talked about how he's a lying, manipulative shill for right-wing billionaires ever since he and Andrew Breitbart got together. Nothing about what he's doing brings anything new to the Epstein story. Literally, the only thing that comes out of this is trying to attack the media. That is all he cares about. Also, the stories that Robach was describing were already reported prior to her shelved interview by Gawker. You might remember that Gawker was destroyed after a lawsuit brought by Hulk Hogan, which was paid for by fuckhead libertarian billionaire Peter Thiel. Probably not important to point out that Peter Thiel has given James O'Keefe a ton of money, as far back as 2009. The very person who funded a lawsuit to put out of business one of the first media organizations that covered the Epstein story is also one of James O'Keefe's early backers. Life's weird. So fuck all this shit. I don't care about James O'Keefe and his nonsense.
Yeah, what was it? We talked about it on that day, and it was basically, it was like, why would I... Don't listen to anything that they say, ever. Ever.
At least.
Ever.
At least don't take it at face value.
I will, if there is anything that they have to say, then it will be filtered through a outlet that has fucking standards.
Yes.
So why would I listen to them?
Yeah, you can default.
Nothing they have to say is worthwhile.
I hate to say something like this, but they have certainly deserved it or earned the reputation. You can just write off
whatever they're saying.
You can ignore Project Veritas, and if any information is in any way relevant, some other outlet that has, you know, independent streaks to it will cover that story better and with actual confirming. It's a trash fucking outlet. And you know that because every time he comes out with a scoop, he goes on fucking InfoWars to talk about it.
Yeah.
You need any more proof that he's up to no good?
Right.
He's fucking hanging out with this white identity shitbag agitator.
Yeah. And that idea of like, oh, well, he got one this time. Like, in what world does he pitch a story and then follow it through with reporting? Like, there's Never. No, it is purely, here is what we are going to say. Find us a way to say it that sounds right.
Yeah.
It is never going to be he accidentally stumbles onto good reporting.
So Alex jumps off from this topic and he gets to, hey, another race story that he's fucking completely lying about.
Well, we knew it was coming. It's on InfoWars.com and NewsWars.com, and it's so incredibly important, and I'll get to it in the last segment of this hour. UK National Health Service to deny treatment to, quote, racist and sexist. They control the jury of the leftist mob and media. They call you something, no due process. Even if you were that, you shouldn't lose your rights. And now you can starve to death on the side of the road. No bank accounts, no jobs, no health care, no welfare.
I'm going to start off by saying that I'm not sure where I land on this story entirely. It's definitely not what Alex is saying it is, but it does raise some moral questions that I'm not sure I have the perfect answer for. The way Alex is describing this story, he's pretending that some board of leftists are going to accuse you of being a racist, and then when you go to the hospital with a broken arm, they'll pull up your file and say, sorry, we don't treat racists. And that's not even close to the reality.
I feel like if we do have that, though, we should get to wear robes. Like, full-on, like...
leftist overlord robes?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
This is not close to the reality, which, again, is not perception. This is a story about the North Bristol Trust, a company that services hospitals in Bristol, launching a new program called the Red Card to Racism. In the program, if a patient is being abusive to a staff member in a racist or sexist way, they'll be given a warning and a yellow card. If they refuse to stop being racially abusive, they'll get a red card. And if it's safe to do so, at that point, they will withdraw from providing treatment for this patient. The program grew out of a large spike in racist abuse being thrown at staff at the hospital and a recognition that no one should have to work in that sort of environment. I definitely support that, and I think the program isn't super bad, given that there is a warning system and the fact that they won't withdraw services if doing so is unsafe for the patient. If a patient, like, needs a breathing tube, they're not going to jeopardize that person's health because they're a racist. But if you have, like, a sprained wrist and you won't stop yelling racist shit, they're going to claim their space and refuse to provide service.
Yeah, if you've got a breathing tube, it's really hard to shout racial slurs.
Well, or if you're on a, a defibrillator or a pacemaker or whatever. Right. If it's unsafe for them to withdraw services, they can't do that.
In critical condition, they're going to keep doing that.
I'm torn because my gut tells me that the medical workers should not make judgment calls about who they should help and who they should not. But that's kind of based on some idealized feelings I have about the profession. At the same time, the more I think about it, these nurses and receptionists and doctors, they're human beings, not unfeeling healing robots. If racist abuse is a problem that's reaching the point where it needs to be addressed at this Bristol hospital, I feel like I would be shitty for my argument to be that these doctors should suck it up and deal with it because their profession has a higher calling. If this were a thing where people who are known racists, like let's say David Duke, that they were being denied care, even though he acted politely at the hospital, I think I would be against that. But this program, as it's laid out, what ends up happening is solely based on the patient's behavior. And I think that's okay.
Yeah.
I think that's all right.
If you're a server and your table is hurling racist abuse at you, there are so many places that won't allow you to say a goddamn word.
Right.
You know,
and I think
you should
be able to
do that. Yeah. Absolutely, right? And absolutely, there is a difference between a hospital and a restaurant there. But people are still the same people who work.
Yeah.
So you're going to get racist abuse shit on at you.
That's why
you should be able to stop it.
That's why I'm super conflicted, because on a human level, I agree with that 100%. But there is some lingering feelings about, like,
the Hippocratic Oath and all of that stuff.
Yeah. But I think that doesn't apply. I'm on the side that I think that if there was no warning or if they could risk your life by withdrawing treatment because you're racist, I would feel very uncomfortable with this. But the way it's set up, I think, I don't know. I think it's all right. And it, whatever the case is, even if I have some sort of like mixed feelings about it that err on the side of being in favor of
it
has nothing to do with what Alex is talking about.
Right.
The way he's presenting the story is completely dishonest based on his perceptions.
Right.
As opposed to reality.
And I like, I wish more comedy clubs would institute the red card policy.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, man. Two strikes and you're out. That's perfect.
Yeah. So it's November 5th.
Sure.
Roger Stone's trial is starting that day.
Yep.
And Alex has a Roger Stone associate named Jacob Engels on to talk about it.
Joining us is Jacob Engels of Central Florida Post. We're going to get one of Roger's lawyers on who's able to speak tomorrow. Jesus. Tyler Nixon.
That does not end
up. But today we've got Jacob Engels who's been there. We can also roll some video while he's speaking for TV viewers of Roger arriving at court today. Also, folks, we're bullhorning there that Roger Stone did nothing wrong.
Full disclosure, I believe that I have interacted with Jacob Engels on Twitter before.
Oh, yeah?
One time, I was watching one of Alex's marathons, and I was getting pretty drunk while I was doing it.
Sure.
So I decided to start tweeting out some commentary.
Okay.
One of the people who came on Alex's marathon was Jacob Engels, who was just there to talk about how Roger Stone is great. I have no idea what I tweeted at him, and I didn't tweet at him. I didn't at him. It was just his name, so he had to have name searched.
Right, right, right.
And about 1 minute...
What a surprise that he would name search, by the way. Yeah.
About 1 minute after his segment ended, I got a response from him. It was surreal. It was like the TV talking back to me. Anyway, I can't find our tweets, but I don't remember them being too heated or anything. I don't have any like real memory of it being like, oh my God, this is fucked up.
Yeah.
I probably can't find our tweets because he got kicked off Twitter after he posted some Islamophobic nonsense. And now he's listed as a writer for Laura Loomer's website. So things look like they're going pretty great.
Oh, boy. Well, at least, Grant Hill isn't going to shut that one down.
He is also probably a member of the Proud Boys.
No.
This guy sucks.
Boy.
Anyway, he is on, and this is where the bombshell gets dropped.
Okay.
We got there today early ahead of Roger's trial to welcome him, give him strength, give him love. And he went in, and immediately one of the first jurors and jury selection was an Obama communications director appointee whose husband works in the deep state. And what did the corrupt Obama era judge say? That person's political background and service in the Obama administration and her husband's service in the intelligence community had no bearing on their ability to be objective. This is a sham witch hunt show trial.
Excuse me, we didn't talk before you came on. I followed a lot of your coverage, but missed the last few hours. You're telling, slow down and repeat that.
Alex is completely caught off guard by this. Alex has no idea what to
do. Wait. Start from
the beginning. Hold on.
In the beginning was the word. Begin there and then catch me up in a few years.
Yeah. So this is news to Alex, and he does not know what to do with it.
Oh, boy.
She is allowing an Obama era White House communications director to be a juror whose husband works in the deep state intelligence community.
Wow. You were there. Can you tell us the name, or is that gagged?
You're not allowed to say the names of the individual, but all I can tell you is it's Washington, D.C. 97% of the District of Columbia voted for Hillary Clinton. So this is the jury that Roger Stone is going to be facing.
Small point, Hillary got 90% of the vote in D.C. in the 2016 election. I mean, it's still a high number, but yeah. I have no idea why these guys can't just get anything right. Even when the correct number still makes their point.
Still ridiculously high.
Yeah. It's like they're pathologically driven to escalate things.
They have
to. Just can't stop.
It couldn't be 90%. It has to be 92%.
Yeah.
It just can't be the right number.
Yeah. So Alex is immediately like, we got to fucking figure out who this person is.
Why don't they just have Robert Mueller as the jury or Hillary Clinton? You're saying Obama White House communications director. Well, let's look up the names of who those folks were. Holy mackerel.
Oh, no, that's not good.
Nope. But you can see that's his immediate instinct is.
Oh, boy. His immediate instinct is I'm going to sick my InfoWars people on her and she's going to die.
Well, I mean, we can say that pretty confidently, or at least that's what he wishes to happen.
Yeah.
Based on all of the context we have from his prior behavior, how things have happened in the real world. You know, I don't find any plausible argument that he's not trying to intimidate somebody.
No, absolutely.
Or
not.
At least tamper with the jury somehow.
We're coming off Boston fucking marathon, him jumping into a story and releasing a picture of somebody who's not involved within seconds. Of course this is going to happen, and it's going to be a nightmare.
Yes. Now, whether or not you could prove in court that he's intending to intimidate is another issue. Mm-hmm. I think that I can confidently say it from my feelings and my experience of studying Alex, that is exactly what he's trying to do. But in court, I think you'd have a much more difficult time proving that intention.
I think in a jury of your peers, you would do just fine.
I think
you'd be all right,
Dan. If it was 12 Dans.
If there were.
Some Danielles.
That would be rude.
So Engels wants to, you know, he's talking about how there was a bunch of people there to support Roger. And I just think that this clip is really funny because Alex has to interrupt Engels to go to break. But then he gets cut off by the break. There's just a series of interruptions that happen at the end of this clip that I find pretty funny.
By the way, no communist or alt-left protesters. There were only people there supporting Roger, a multiracial group of people from all across the country who came out to show Stone that he has love and he has support. And
Jacob Engels, the reporter that Roger Stone trusts to cover the trial for him, when we come back to you. Joy Behar went on national TV and said, we're going to lie and get in and then take the guns. Just like this judge to the first juror they bring forward.
Would you like to get back that full head of hair from years past?
It's insane. He has no idea how to handle this story that's dropped into his lap. So he has to go back to the Joy Behar talking point. And then he just has no timing. So he gets cut off by the break.
That's fun.
Yeah. So he gets back and here's how he introduces Jacob Engels.
Jacob Engels, respected longtime reporter, Central Florida Post. Roger Stone's friend. He's been here to visit us in studio.
The Central Florida Post is a name that sounds like a newspaper.
It really does.
I should tell you that it is definitely not.
Okay.
It is a blog that Jacob Engels runs, which he named that way so people who didn't know any better might think it's a newspaper.
Yeah.
Here are some of the headlines currently up on the homepage of the Central Florida Post.
Poop tastes good.
Quote, fake news outlet Orlando Weekly is going broke. Oh, weird. Everybody in this world hates the media. Quote, American Priority Conference hosting Trump Jr. and Matt Gaetz. This one's basically just a press release for an event at Trump's Doral property. Quote, Disney profit increases upset theme park socialists. No idea what that one's about. Did not click on the link.
Ugh.
This is a blog. Good for Jacob for having some motivation and follow through. I respect the hustle of naming your blog something that sounds like a newspaper, but I can't give this a pass. He used the term theme park socialists in a headline.
Yeah.
This is not a serious outlet.
Yeah, come on, theme park socialists.
Theme park socialists.
Haven't you seen those theme park socialists? Every time I go to a theme park, I'm like, oh, get these goddamn socialists out of here.
So Alex he's had the break to try and gather his marbles. And now the story is that this juror had been selected for the jury.
There we go. Now it's metastasized.
It's not true.
Of course it's not.
But this is how it goes.
And he just laid an incredible bombshell on us. One of Barack Obama's former communications directors at the White House has been chosen as the first juror, and the judge approved it.
This music is dramatic as shit.
Such a circus. The judge is appointed by Obama, and now the first juror, and the day's almost over there.
So if your standard for who can preside over a case is anybody who was appointed by Obama is invalid, that's a fucking bullshit standard.
No. Anybody appointed by Obama is invalid. You'll never get a fair trial out of a judge appointed by Obama.
It's a nonsensical standard of jury of your peers, impartial judge, whatever.
Well, you can't get a Clinton judge either.
Oh, no.
Because Roger Stone doesn't like...
That also not a George H.W. Bush judge.
No, you can't. I mean, I suppose you could get a Reagan judge?
Maybe not.
Probably not if you're Roger Stone, yeah.
So, also, Alex is presenting this as the first juror selected. Yeah. In reality, what this is was just interviewing people to be put into the jury pool, which then would be trimmed down.
Right.
It's a preliminary thing.
Okay.
This is nonsense. She wasn't selected for the jury.
It was the first round of cuts, and then there's going to be another round, and then you're going to have the jury.
Yeah, and the reporting on it in Reuters was saying that the judge, the reason that she didn't exclude this person from the potential jury pool was that they had said that they could make an impartial decision.
Yeah.
Despite their career, despite the job that they formerly had, they could see this impartially.
Right.
And that's the standard by which people are excluded or included in the preliminary pool. After that point, you trim it down. You know, the prosecutor and the defense attorney can say, hey, no on this person.
Yeah,
no
they
on.
Have a certain amount where they can strike it for no reason, and then they have to have a reason and that whole thing. Yeah,
and so that's a natural part of the process. If you are a sane person, you would hear this, and you would think, well, there's no way she'll actually be on the jury.
No, absolutely not.
So that's
but what we should do is, even though she'll never be on that jury, is release her picture so a bunch of people can harass her until she dies.
That
right?
would be fun.
Yeah, that sounds great.
It's a good thing no one would do that.
Yeah.
But at this point, on November 5th, Alex decides, all right, Jacob Engels isn't going to tell me who this person is. So I'm going to pull up a list of communications directors.
Wow! We're just going to be committing crimes today,
He's going to play a guessing game with
Engels.
Oh,
boy.
You know, maybe you can blink or maybe take the glasses off when I say the right name. Ellen Moran. Anita Dunn. Acting. Dan Pfeiffer.
I think it was him.
Dan Pfeiffer?
Not allowed to reveal
Jennifer
names.
Palmieri. Jennifer Palmieri. 2013, 2015. Oh my God. Jen Paskey. I guess it's not her, huh? Wow. Well, you saw you nod. Maybe you'll be thrown in prison. That was involuntary. Because this judge is God. None of us can talk. None of us can say anything. Because we've got to have Obama's former communications director hang Roger. Hell, if they give him the death penalty, maybe she can hang him and kick the lever and he'll, you know, break his neck and she can piss all over his dead body. I mean, my gosh, Jacob, these people are out of control.
You're absolutely right, Alex.
Family show. Family show. Kissing all over everybody.
You're absolutely right, Alex.
So here's the thing. The reporting on this that was tweeted out by, I regret that I don't have the person's name, but there were people from like courthouse news, court reporters who were there who were tweeting out things along with the trial. And it was reported in Reuters that the person in question, this juror, this potential juror, was a communications director for the Office of Budget and Management, or Management and Budget.
Yeah.
Alex is reading off a list of White House communications directors.
Sure.
So,
sure.
He has the wrong position.
Right.
And is just guessing names and has decided that it's this Palmieri.
Right.
Right. Lady.
I don't understand how humanity has gotten as far as we have. That's the real question.
The
I
list
have.
That he's pulling potential people from cannot include the person because he's using the wrong list.
Yeah. I remember numbers theory, a set of whole numbers.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But that doesn't stop him from deciding he knows what's up.
You sat there with your eyeballs when Jennifer Palmieri had this all little nod there in this free country. You can't tell me. Because we're not allowed to know it's Obama's former communications director, but I guess his lawyers, what Roger's lawyers, without getting into the name, I guess they search engine the person's name and were like, oh my God, this is Obama's communications director. Holy mackerel. You know, this person's a guest host on MSNBC. What was the judge saying at this point when she engaged? It's like saying Hitler would run the Nuremberg trials.
Well, all I can say is from what happened in the courtroom today, there was a well-known Obama communications asset that was allowed to be a juror. And the judge said with a straight face that that was no conflict of interest, that serving in the Obama administration was not a conflict. Past that, her husband is a member of the deep state intelligence community. That's not a conflict.
Hey, look up Palmieri's husband. Okay. I've seen a lot of things, but knowing how the law works, the fact that they're doing this, Trump's got to pardon him. Or they're trying to... What the hell? You can't... I know who Palmieri is. That person's been all the news. They're going to have Obama's former communications director be the juror who's meant... You know why they were first? To lead the jury to convict him.
So...
What?
So none of this is real, but...
This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Fucking pack it in. Yeah. Let's call it. Call it here. What is it? 7:25. America's gone. Let's just... call it.
This is a ludicrous thing that's happened, but it's partially because Alex got blindsided by this information by Engels on Air, and he's now having to sort of roll with it. So he's decided it's this Jennifer Palmieri, which it is not.
It cannot be.
No, but
it isn't just not. It can not.
He's building up this case that it is. That's interesting to me. But in this next clip, he's rambling around a little bit. And I really felt like he was trying to get to a plug.
Yeah.
But he just couldn't do it. I think that you'll feel the same
way. We'll see.
So we're going to go back to our guest here in a moment. I'm just going to say this right now. Oh, my God. Looks like she worked for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, too. Oh, no. Oh, my God. You know what that means, too. They're producing full TV shows to demonize me, funded by Bill and Melinda Gates on ABC, NBC, CBS, you know, The Good Doctor, all of it. I mean, these people are pure evil. I'm going to stop right there. We're going back to our guest.
Yeah, that felt like he was trying to get to a plug. I really felt that.
Yeah.
And I love the way he's like NBC, ABC, all of CBS, all of it, The Good Doctor. That's the only specific he has. Yeah. There's no evidence at all that there was in any way connected to the Bill and Melinda Gates.
He's just saying networks.
It's so great. So stupid. Like, this is just the dumbest shit I've ever heard in my life.
I really am, I shouldn't be surprised, but the swiftness with which he came to complete 100% certainty is just kind of astonishing, right? I've never gone from zero. I still regret cereal choices from yesterday. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but you understand that this is partially, like, this is what he has to do. Mm-hmm. He has to stake a claim really fast.
For sure.
It's a strategy that he has in order to get attention.
Yeah.
Like, because all of this, it really is like, okay, we have something, we got to run with it.
Yeah.
But this will get a lot of attention if we out this juror.
Yeah, I kind of feel like maybe this is one where everybody should have just ignored him.
Yeah, I think so too, especially because from what I understand, it's not technically illegal what he's doing.
Yeah.
It's disgraceful and also dangerous. So yeah. I don't actually know if I agree with you on the ignoring it thing, because it is a really good present day example of the sort of behavior that leads to why he is a problem.
No, for sure.
And I think that there is maybe a teachable moment in it, more so than a lot of times I see things being posted about him that are just like, you guys should let this one go.
Well,
you should let this slide.
I mean, that's kind of the thing there is, for me, it seems like the only way that he is going to get enough eyeballs on, you know, maybe, we still don't know exactly what the size of his audience is.
No.
But it is far less than the amount of people who are going to see it if it's tweeted out by Right Wing Watch.
True.
And retweeted and so on and so forth.
My position on it that you know? I feel is like, I think that this is a story that is worth people paying attention to and knowing about in comparison to other times. And just fucking leave this alone.
You're giving him attention. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't like turn him into a meme.
Yeah.
But this is worthwhile. But I also think that there is a responsibility to understand it in a fuller context.
As
opposed to a little soundbite of him saying that he's going to out the person's name.
For sure.
Understanding it within, like, how does this fit into his strategies more generally?
Mm.
What is he actually doing? What is the point here? And I think that those things are something that's, I don't know if it's missing, because I haven't read all the coverage of this. So that would be wrong of me to say that no one is talking about the larger picture.
Yeah.
But I think it definitely is missing from a lot of the conversation that I see on Twitter about this particular instance. There is a more important thing that is part of this story without focusing on Alex and understanding him more than most people care to. There is a context that is missed.
Okay.
That's what I would say.
All right.
So in that last clip that I played for you, I told you it felt like he was trying to get to a plug. And I'm thrilled to announce he definitely was trying to get to a plug.
Good.
And if they think having some judges put Obama head communications directors, hell, have the press secretary in there. Hell, have Obama do it. If political background has nothing to do with it, hell, like I said, let the Nazi party get in a time machine and go back to 1946 to the Nuremberg trials. Literally, if political affiliation has nothing to do with a juror, then let Nazi party members sit in judgment over the Nazis. What a load of malarkey. But they're murdering common sense because they can't beat common sense. I'll say this briefly. We're ending the Big Mega Sale the next 2 days.
Oh.
I have to. I'm so busy. I'm going with the new sale. We're selling out of all of our best-selling items. And so I have 40 to 70% off, store-wide free shipping, double Patriot points. It's about to have to end.
That's almost whiplash.
Man.
That was just after the last clip, too. Woo. So that's why I'm saying, like, woo, he was definitely trying to get to a plug.
Sense of Nazis under the Euro Nuremberg trials. We're out of common sense. We're about to end our specials, too. Yeah. So you got to watch out for
that. He definitely just got distracted by someone in his ear saying Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Yeah, no kidding.
In the middle of trying to get to a goddamn plug, and that's why he's got to talk so fast, because he's running out of time.
What an idiot.
Yeah. So Alex is pretending that the media is covering up the fact that this potential juror was formerly in the Office of Budget and Management.
Man, it is very, very amazing how quickly this happens.
Yep.
Other points you can add to us about this, sir, and how we're now not supposed to, and the media says they're not supposed to tell us that Obama's communications director, I guess when they're walking in and out, everybody knows who they are and they're famous, we're just all supposed to ignore that too, like all the pedophile rings?
What? I saw this tweeted out in real time. Reuters had an article that talked about it. Like, this is, no one's covering anything up. They're just not behaving like you.
Yeah.
That's all.
Because they understand...
Yeah.
Reality or perception.
Perception.
Ah.
So Alex is like, this judge is in your face. This tyranny is so naked.
No.
And they discuss why is that the case.
Okay.
Why do you think it's so in our face?
It's in our face because they're trying to teach every single one of the people that are listening right now a lesson that if you stand up and you fight for America, you fight for America first, you fight for making this country great again, for alternative media, for things like InfoWars and freedom and truth and liberty, then you will be punished. You will be shamed. You will be dragged through court. Your finances will be depleted. Your family will be ruined. That's what they're trying to do.
Well, that's it. They want us to know this is a political torture and destruction and assassination in front of us. They want us to know they're crooks. That judge wants us to know she's a thug. Exactly. This is openly just rubbing it in.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it is.
Wow.
If you probably committed serious crimes, they want to make an example of you. No, no, no. It's just because you support InfoWars and the alternative media.
Man, that is... That is that level of, like, why are we even trying to, why am I trying to have a conversation with you at all about in the impartiality or impartiality of a potential juror?
It's nonsense.
It doesn't matter what they are. If I said
they
voted for Obama, he'd be like, see, you can't vote for Obama and be impartial on a judge for Roger Stone. You voted for Obama.
You'd find something.
Yeah.
And honestly, I don't want to, like, oversell this, but I know exactly what's going on here. I think it's very transparent if you watch this through. The entire episode's context, the things that he's done in the past, it's very, very obvious what he's
trying to get Palmieri on his show.
Yep, totally. Yep. So, Alex, this is the last clip from the 5th. He decides that he's going to go and cover Roger's trial.
Oh, fuck off.
This is so evil. I wasn't going to come cover the trial because I didn't want to be a distraction. I'm coming now. I'm coming. And
we welcome you, Alex. Get here.
Everyone needs to be there. Everyone go support Roger. Because this is bigger than Roger Stone now. They are literally railroading him. And it's confirmed that it's the former Obama communications director will lead the jury. She'll probably make her the foreman.
That's so fake.
Is that how we end the show?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's a load of bullshit. But just to break up the 5th and the 6th, I forgot to play this at the beginning. So here is an out-of-context drop from today's episodes.
I have been in satanic rituals. I left them. I got tricked into being at them twice.
Okay. Fool me once.
How many times?
Fool me once.
How many times have you been fooled by the Nigerian scammers now? Which is which?
Got tricked into going to two satanic rituals. Not again.
He's so stupid. He's so stupid. How do you get tricked into a second satanic ritual?
After that, he clarifies, like, well, I went to Bohemian Grove, so maybe it's actually three.
Oh, like, well, you didn't get... Well,
that's not tricked.
Fuck off.
Yeah. So we jump in here on the 6th, and Alex announces that he's had a giant epiphany about how the globalists
work.
Oh,
man. He's got so many of these.
Yeah.
I got up very early this morning, did a lot of research. And then I worked out real hard for about an hour. And while the blood was pumping through the brain, I was having explosive
diarrhea.
Understanding
oh, okay.
of the enemy's operation. I already understand many layers of it and structures of it more than even top generals in the New World Order know their own system.
Mm. What?
But I can see the fractal design of it and the sickening art form that it basically is. And I have a critical piece of the puzzle I want to talk about.
So when I heard that, I was like, this is going to be disappointing. No matter what he says, it's going to be something he said 100 times
or some bullshit.
And honestly, I listened to the rest of this episode. I'm not sure what it was.
Oh, well, that's actually a refreshing new direction for him to go.
I would say that it's a disappointment, but I don't know what the breakthrough epiphany was.
I like that. I like that. Leave me in suspense. Maybe we'll get to it some other time.
It's very weird because I was listening to it. I was like, is that the epiphany?
He had an epiphany? I had an epiphany.
The sickening fractal system of the globe. I'm like, I don't know. I can't.
Maybe the system is just fractalized and that's what his epiphany was.
I'm not sure what it was, but this next clip was not surprising in any way.
And let me mention the first thing that I'm going to cover in the next hour when criminal lawyer, constitutional lawyer, First Amendment lawyer Robert Barnes is in studio with us.
Ugh.
And I consulted with several lawyers last night and with Barnes this morning, right before I went on air. And George Soros and the little Media Matters outfit are really upset right now because they want to pull the wool over our eyes, as we all know. We had a reporter on yesterday who was in the courtroom and who was completely blown away when a known Obama official that headed up a department whose husband is a lawyer at the Justice Department on the Russiagate hoax, specifically, and Stone's lawyers raised this and tried to strike her, the first juror they looked at. She was waiting. She'll be the jury foreman. Watch.
So when Alex is talking about this juror on these two shows, he's absolutely lying about something very important, which I've already brought up, and that is that they're saying that she was chosen to be a member of the jury.
That's not the case.
At this stage of that the trial was at, they were just interviewing potential jurors. This process would go on and result in a jury pool. After that pool is picked, then the prosecution and defense will have the ability to strike people from the pool, which is almost certainly what would happen in this case. All that's happening is that the judge was indicating that she didn't feel that this person's past job was enough to preclude her from being a potential juror, which I think is fair. If you end up trying to put in place a standard that a jury of your peers has to mean they all politically agree with you, no cult member or extremist would ever be charged with anything in court ever again.
Yeah.
Does Alex imagine that the Proud Boys, for example, all have to be tried in front of a jury of Western chauvinists? It's ridiculous. I've read up on this a little, and from what I understand, what Alex is doing is not specifically illegal, but it's a deep breach of what people consider proper behavior. It would become illegal, very illegal, if he were specifically trying to out this person with the intention of intimidating her. Now, we both know, like we've already discussed, that's exactly what he is doing. But proving that in court would be insanely difficult, so Alex is probably legally in the clear on that. Ethically, though, this is a huge affront to our court system. Juror identities are not something that people are supposed to discuss until the trials are complete, and even then, generally only if the juror decides to come forward. That's kind of a crucial part of the appearance of blind justice, that these jurors can feel empowered to make an unbiased decision, even against powerful or dangerous persons who are on trial, because they know that they aren't necessarily there as themselves. They're representing all of us. In effect, their individual identity is supposed to blur into the whole while they're serving as jurors. Outing jurors' identity makes this way less possible, since it introduces into people's minds the possibility that what they do in a jury box won't stay in that courtroom and could ruin their lives.
Now, it's so easy to get jurors for mafia guys because they knew that nobody would put their name out and they would be safe forever and ever. That's why it was so easy to get juries.
Ultimately, I don't think that Alex's primary goal is to intimidate this juror, potential juror. He wants to create a gigantic public spectacle that gets him free press, which he is achieving. It's so sad that the only ways that he can get any attention these days is to roll around town in a tank or behave in culturally destructive ways that are right on the cusp of being huge felonies.
Yeah.
The other goal he has is to create a preemptive justification for why Roger is going to be found guilty. Alex, because he's worked with Roger and was around, knows that Roger is guilty.
He's so guilty!
He knows, he specifically told Roger to get in touch with WikiLeaks and Guccifer.
We've the most guilty.
We've played clips of him talking about that on the show.
Yeah.
He knows that Roger was coordinating with his other employee, Jerome Corsi, on the matter. Alex knows that Roger is more than likely going to prison. So now it's important to have a narrative in place before that happens. This potential juror is perfect for that. Because now, no matter what happens, this trial is defective to Alex. It doesn't matter if this juror doesn't make the jury. Her very existence in the potential pool of jurors will be used as the talking point for why Roger is a political prisoner, not a criminal.
It's an Obama judge with an Obama lawyer with an Obama jury who's Obamaing all over Roger Stone's Nixon tattoo on his ass.
And that is why what he's primarily interested in here. It's just damage control. But it's damage control that's very dangerous and could put this person through a whole lot of unnecessary trouble. And if it does, I sincerely hope she sues Alex, because I think that his behavior here is the sort of thing...
I hope fucking Jennifer Palmieri sues Alex.
Well, she might not stay in the narrative very long.
I'm still on board with that.
She might have been a suspect for a day, because Alex does end up naming the juror. And it's not her.
Oh, God. He actually does?
Yeah.
Fuck. What an idiot.
Yep. So, like I said, he's lying about her being chosen. And he talks about that a little more here.
She should be struck from being a potential juror. And the judge said, no, she's a juror. She questioned the woman and said, do you have a dog in this fight? There's quotes here. She goes, no, I don't care one way or the other. She's first in line, ready, brought in. And the judge raises her skirt and pisses on the Constitution and the American people.
It's a family show.
Okay.
So Alex mocks the idea that people might think that what he's doing is illegal, because he thinks that he's just being a journalist.
And then Media Matters goes, Jones should get arrested for jury tampering and harassing jurors. It's completely legal and lawful when someone's a public figure. What if Brad Pitt was on the jury? What if Obama was on the jury? What if it was Robert Mueller? What if it was Hillary Clinton? What if it was Chelsea Clinton? Oh, she got called. Oh, she's on it. Oh, Chelsea Clinton's going to sit on the jury for Roger Stone. You'd say, that's crazy.
Yeah, but what if it was Bo Jackson? Wouldn't that be cool?
It's one of their minions. And we've got her name. And we're going to release it. Because that's what the press does. I know there's a war on the press.
Yeah. All right.
So, there's a war on the press that you're leading.
You're deeply involved in.
You're the one warring.
A couple of really quick points. One, Alex says that it's legal and lawful, which is a Barnes catchphrase.
Yeah.
So I know that he's saying that based on meetings with Barnes. That linguistic tick is very specific to Barnes. So that's cool.
Gotcha.
Second, I read the Media Matters article, and it doesn't say that Alex should go to prison for this. They're just saying that this is ridiculous behavior he's engaged in.
Yeah.
He's just making that up as a straw man in order to attack.
Of course.
So, lest you think that this show is all just about this potential juror, no. Alex also has to get into disgusting rants about drag queen story time.
What? Why?
Now it's launching full assaults directly on letting men dressed as women in clown outfits, in satanic outfits, have access to your children and now even show their genitals to them in unannounced events as they fully mark their territory for assimilation and destruction. They're grooming them, and they go to city councils, and they go on TV, and they say, we must have access to your children, the beautiful thing we're going to do with them. This is lovely. This is wonderful. We are here to groom them. They are ours. And sometimes they even go, and you start drinking blood and just savagely, we'll murder them. And you see them going, I want to kill them. And they'll go, excuse me. Because they're uncloaking. They're uncloaking. You think they just want to screw your kids? They want to murder them. But first, they want them begging, alone in the dark, not believing God's real. That's their whale song. And I have a song for them. The fire of God's judgment is coming.
So that's pretty offensive, and it seems really disjointed from our episode, and it is a little bit. You know, it came out of nowhere a little bit. But the reason I wanted to play that is because, like, it's gross. It's sickening. But at the same time, when I was listening to it, one of the things that I couldn't help but think, and I couldn't stop thinking this, is, like, that's just by the book. That's, like, it really felt like he was on autopilot.
Yeah. Just totally.
The demon voice, they want to drink your blood, they're coming to... All of the little beats that were along the way, it's just like, this is boilerplate for Alex.
Yeah.
That really, that juxtaposition of how, like, sickening that rhetoric is... Yeah. And how rote it is in his just delivery.
It's something that he could just rattle off. Yeah. Like, no problem.
Eyes closed.
Yep.
Don't even worry about it. You need me to fill five? I got five.
Yeah. No, there have been a few times where it's like, I'm sure that you've been there as well, where you're doing a long set and you're doing a chunk that you've done for 5 years, and all of a sudden you realize you're thinking about something else while still talking.
Yeah.
You were like, oh shit, I'm still on stage. Holy cow.
Yeah, there were a number of stories that I'd told hundreds of times.
Yeah.
And like, I just could do it mechanically almost. Yeah, absolutely. And that's how it feels here. And that's gross. I mean,
it's disgusting.
But it's also kind of surreal. You know, it's really weird how normal for him things that are horrible are.
Yeah.
So anyway, Alex gets back to the
it's almost like a fire and brimstone preacher in like the medieval era, mm-hmm. of just like, oh, you're just screaming let's kill the Jews all the time and you're fine with it. It doesn't even bother you. Like, we're past that, man.
Yeah. It's jarring. And it's one of those things too that I always have to consider, is like how inundated I am with Alex's shit. That, like, nothing. It's kind of hard to shock me with his rhetoric, and that's like that clip. If you're introduced to that without the context of listening to tons of Alex,
right.
That's nuts,
right?
But for us, it's, you know, hey, it's just Alex talking shit.
Yeah.
It's wild. It's a gross place that I've come to in my life.
I think what's interesting about that for me is that it makes it even more disgusting whenever I hear it from anyone else.
Sure.
Like, from Alex, I'm just like, oh yeah, fucking whatever, you're gonna drink blood and yada yada.
We know this is your marketing tool.
Yeah. But if I hear it from a human being that's just fine, I'm like, you are, what are you doing? You're
No. You took the bait.
Yeah.
So Barnes is on.
Sure.
Because it's a day and it's Alex's show, so one of his lawyers is here.
Yep.
So he's on, and he has a fucking interesting way of looking at this case.
Today, media organizations were pushing back, saying that the identity of the jurors could not be disclosed, that somehow it would be a criminal act or a bad act if that took place. That's nonsense.
Used to be the media demanding everything be public.
Absolutely.
Now they're the executioners. They're the attack dogs of Tyrannus.
Well, if it was one of theirs on trial, they would be demanding disclosure and they would be talking about bias. Imagine if you were in the 1960s and the media came out and said, you can't talk about the Klan connection of a juror in an African-American defendant case. That's precisely what took place here.
That is not precisely what took place here.
Barnes?
That is not what took place here.
Barnes can be relied upon for a big swing. Every time we've seen him on the show, he has at least one big cut, you know?
Yeah.
He's taking it.
And so this is what he's bringing to the table. Yeah. Is like, all we're doing is highlighting jury bias.
Yeah.
Often jury bias was only exposed when the identity of the individual was named. They're like, hey, I have this information. I have that information. Hey, they misled on this. What protects a fair trial in this country is open, free press.
That's right. We're going to bring that power back by sheer force of will. We're going to expose this prospective juror, the first one brought up by the judge that works for Obama and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and whose husband is deep inside the operation with the fake Russiagate hoax on the other side.
So now that Alex has spoken with Barnes, and Barnes is there, he's being a little more careful because he is saying prospective juror.
Yeah.
So that is interesting. That is sort of a changing, and maybe it's just an updating of information. Maybe he sincerely believed earlier that she was chosen as a juror.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know what it is, but
or he had a conversation and Barnes was like, "Okay, here's what you have to tell the truth about, and here's what you can lie about. Well, but we got to get these things right."
Yeah, but what we can say for sure is that Barnes absolutely advised Alex on this.
Yeah,
This morning we had a lengthy meeting. We pulled up the Supreme Court rulings. He said, absolutely. It's not just your right, Alex. It's your duty to release the name of the woman who's been picked as the first prospective juror. They tried to strike her. And the judge said, no. Wait till Robert Barnes, esteemed lawyer, lays this out for you. Because this is way bigger than Roger Stone, who we all feel for. We have empathy. Because we know we're next. Myself, literally. When something happens to Roger, it's like it's happening to me. That's what empathy is.
That is not empathy.
No, that's not how that works.
That's not empathy.
No, that's somehow narcissism again.
That's narcissism by proxy. It's interesting, though. I mean, like, if you have that as his definition of empathy, then
yeah.
Yes. Looking out.
If it hurts me.
Yeah. If this is an indication of something bad that's coming to me, I experience it as bad. That is not empathy. Anyway, on the last episode, on November 5th, Alex said, while he was talking to Engels, that Engels was going to come back on, as well as Tyler Nixon,
sure.
Roger's lawyer.
Sure.
And it turns out that is not going to happen.
Oh, no.
And now, on the second day, I talked to our reporters and Stone's people, and they're so scared they won't even talk. No, they said, the judge is going crazy. This is about an hour ago. In fact, just about an hour ago. Talked during a break. The judge is going crazy, threatening everybody. We can't talk about anything. Well, you know, it's about this, that we had Mr. Engels on, reporter from Florida who was there. And what he said was true. It was in Reuters. It was in AP. I'm going to show you what he said. But Media Matters, run by George Soros, says I should be arrested for this. That's jury tampering.
Media Matters didn't say that. In the article that I read about this this instance, I don't know what Alex is talking about. I would assume that maybe Roger told them not to go on.
Yeah.
I would assume that that's a possibility, because Roger is like, I know what Alex does.
Yeah.
You've done enough.
Yeah.
Like, we've created the kernel of if I'm found guilty, then I'm a political prisoner. The narrative is in place. You can only do more damage
exactly.
At this point.
Yeah. There's only down for you to go. The more you talk, the worse it gets.
Anybody who's actually associated with me concretely, my lawyer, my assistant, Jacob Engels.
Yep.
Stay away from that for now. It is too hot.
Engels,
that's my guess.
Engels nailed it. Here's what he did. He said that there was a juror that had that information, and then he winked or coughed or waved a little bit.
Yeah.
Done. Don't say another fucking word.
He threw the bomb and Alex lit it. Like
yep.
Whatever kind of metaphor you want to make. Like, he is in the clear of whatever Alex's actions are.
Yep.
He just said something that, it
was
in a Reuters article.
Yep. So there you go. Alex is the one who's committing all the crimes with it.
Yep. Well, again, maybe
whether
not crimes.
They're legal or not,
right.
There are crimes.
They're crimes against civility.
Yeah.
But Alex now announces, we're going to out these people.
Then they called it the first magic person. That warning did not stop Stone. Oh, see, he's bad. Lawyers from trying to strike the very first one, a woman who once served as communications director for the White House Office of Management and Budget. That's the most important office, folks. That's the money. Under Democratic President Barack Obama, and whose husband is a Justice Department national security attorney. We looked him up. We're going to expose him as well right now. Next segment. But Barnes is going to start first.
He keeps teasing this out because obviously he wants people to know he's going to do this in order to draw as many eyes as possible.
Hey,
this is still just a stunt.
Stop in your car right now. Roll down the window. Scream over. Alex is about to reveal the juror. Yeah.
So he's now learned that it's a communications director for the Office of Management and Budget, which means that it's not Jennifer Palmieri, who he said the day before. And keep in mind that he says that he's dug into this husband of hers, too.
Sure. Deep state operative.
Right. We'll see what kind of deep research he's going to present on that.
So, I like that he's like, the Office of Management, that's the important one. That's where the money is.
The money.
Like, no one has ever described the OMB as being the one where the money is.
Well, I mean, it's got budget right there.
I understand it's got budget right
there. So Alex has got Barnes in there, and he knows that if this is presented in such a way that it appears that Alex is intimidating a juror, then he could be in legal trouble.
Bad.
So he has to explicitly say that they're not doing that.
That's not the same thing as not doing it.
You might argue that.
There's nobody out there who wants to in any way intimidate the juror or affect the juror at all or any prospective juror at all. The point is to know the identities of the jury so that people can independently make their own inquiries and judgment about whether the process is being done fairly.
You wouldn't want John Gotti's son as a juror at his trial.
Exactly.
I would argue that his audience that he's cultivated over the years, they're digging into things and seeing if things are on the up and up is materially identical to harassment.
Yeah. Historically speaking.
I do not trust them to be a brain trust of good researchers.
God.
But I mean, that is what you call a disclaimer.
Barnes.
That's Barnes throwing out a, Alex, if we're going to do this, have to say this.
And he didn't even do it well. He did it and it still sounded like a protection. Look, nobody wants anything bad to happen. Nobody wants anything bad to happen less than we do. We don't want anything to happen the most bad.
Right.
And that is why if you don't give us $100,000, we're going to release your name to the mob. I just can't. We don't want anything bad to happen.
Yeah. So Alex is pretending and announcing this as we have the person. We know this is the person who is the potential juror, which makes it bad that this is how he's describing his process.
Well, by process of elimination and going off our own reporters and Reuters and AP and everybody saying it was a woman whose husband works at the Justice Department on the Mueller case and international espionage affairs.
They didn't say that.
There's only one woman who worked as the head of public relations for the Office of Budget Management in the Obama years. And she was there in 2013 and 2014.
So he's gearing up. He knows that, like I said, next segment we're going to do this. They still is not going to fucking put up and say this person's name just yet. He has to make this even more suspicious. No Republicans are allowed on the jury. But as he's saying that, Barnes comes in. I don't know how to describe this, but I feel like this is a little bit sexist.
To see how this judge is not letting any Republicans on, but you were saying sees a woman like herself on another Obama appointee.
Oh, yeah. I mean, her background is professional class background, Obama appointee, sort of looks like what Hillary would look like, looks like your iconic demographically fits your Obama appointee and Hillary acolyte.
A white profile. Cat lady.
I mean, yeah, very professional. It's that professional class mindset. I call it sort of like it's people who would have otherwise been first grade teachers now with the power of the judge or the power of the Senate or whatever power they have. But they tend to leverage that power aggressively.
Instead of sending us to detention, they put us in prison for speech.
One way to hear that, I think it's difficult to hear that outside of like these women belong as first grade teachers, not in government.
Yeah.
They don't belong in public office. Like I don't know what point he's trying to make other than that.
What does she looks kind of like what Hillary Clinton would look like?
Yeah.
Even mean.
I'm not sure. I don't care. I don't care that much.
It's stupid. It's just an insane sentence.
Yeah.
It's an insane sentence.
Yeah. So in this next clip, Barnes lies a little bit more about the selection process of these jurors.
I mean, by the logic she employed, only people with a personal bias against Roger Stone were going to be excluded. No one who had a strong bias against Trump was going to be excluded.
And as you said, the prosecutor is opened up today. It's in the news, making it all about Trump.
Robert Barnes is a goddamn liar. Allow me to read to you from the Reuters article that Alex has referenced many times on this episode. The headline of this story is, quote, longtime Trump advisor Roger Stone takes ill during jury selection for trial. Here's what it says. Quote, some prospective jurors were excluded because they indicated they could not put aside their dislike of Trump. Bias against Trump was definitely disqualifying for jurors. Robert Barnes just made that shit up to make it look like this trial that was happening with Roger is some kind of a setup. That's because they need that to be the perception, not the reality. The perception, because they know he's fucking guilty as shit, and they need preemptive spin. Robert Barnes is not a lawyer. He is a propagandist.
Yeah.
If Roger is found guilty, what does that mean for this entire operation? Roger was working at InfoWars at the time. He was disseminating his information on Alex's show. His emails that involved the planning and coordination, those were between himself and Alex's other employee, Jerome Corsi. If Roger is found guilty, that introduces some really hard questions for Alex that he'd rather not deal with. So the best way to do that is to preemptively argue to the audience that this case is a sham. So no matter the outcome, it means nothing. It's the perfect strategy if your audience is stupid, because if Roger ends up acquitted, then you get to say that they tried to railroad him, but he was so innocent that he still won. This is all just parlor tricks.
Yeah.
This is all that Alex has. This is all that he does, which shouldn't be surprising. What's a little more offensive is that his lawyer is complicit in this charade. I don't know how
he wears many hats, Dan. On TV, puts that propagandist hat on. It says, "My God, give me money." And then when he gets out the door, he puts the hat on that says, "I'm a bad lawyer."
I don't know how this process works, but I think that Barnes's license should be reviewed.
Absolutely.
Reviewed.
No, absolutely.
Let's see if this is a becoming behavior of someone who's allowed to practice law. Because I don't know that it is. So, in this next clip, we finally get down to business, and Alex finally reveals the name of this supposed juror.
Okay, so let's get to it right now. Here is who lines up with the only woman that ran this office in PR, the only one that has a husband in the Justice Department and the whole Mueller thing. Dr. McCam, shot, please. Sylvia Matthews Burwell. There she is. 1965, she's born. She met her husband at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And she was brought into government and worked directly under Bill Clinton. You can go read all this for yourself, ladies and gentlemen. And her husband, again, works at the Justice Department.
I argue very confidently that Alex Jones, by the very nature of his show and his entire career, is attempting to engage in jury tampering by making a big production out of revealing this woman's name on air. At the same time, I'm not positive that that's something that could be proven in court, and he may be within the realm of what's technically legal. This is an offensive display, and anyone who knows anything about Alex knows what he's trying to do, but there's a good chance he won't have any legal consequences, so whatever.
Yeah.
But there's another reason why he may not get in trouble for this. He absolutely got the wrong person again. Jennifer Palmieri was the first person he decided.
I knew it!
He's wrong again.
I knew he wasn't going to get this one right. Because the moment he said, "Oh, we've narrowed it down. This is the only woman."
Process
she was there,
of 13, elimination.
14, I was like, "No, you fucking didn't. There were like 20 other women. And you're just fucking lazy."
I don't know who the actual person is. And even if I did, I wouldn't say their name on air. I'm only discussing. I was considering bleeping out the person's name, Sylvia.
I was a little surprised you didn't. Yeah.
I was considering doing that. But in order to demonstrate how wrong Alex is, and he's already put this name out.
Yeah, that's
from the information obvious. Available by Jacob Engels, as well as the stuff that was tweeted out by other court reporters who were on the scene, the potential juror specifically worked as a, quote, communications director at the Office of Management and Budget. Sylvia Matthews Burwell never held that position. She instead was the director of the Office of Management and Budget, which is a different role. Alex is so goddamn sloppy with his details that he doesn't recognize the difference between director and communications director. And because he's so desperate for attention and to create a narrative that will invalidate Roger's eventual conviction, he's just completely fucked up this story. I feel like if Matthews Burwell receives any kind of harassment or threats because of this, she may have a pretty solid case against Alex. There's no reason for him to report that she was on this jury other than some identifying details that he got wrong and his alleged process of elimination. Honestly, this sort of thing highlights why he can't understand that the ABC News video that Project Veritas put out is full of shit. He can't understand that journalistic outlets have standards for information that they report, and they can't just say whatever the fuck they want, damn the torpedoes. He's made an entire career off not being careful at all, getting everything wrong, and being rewarded for it. So it kind of makes sense that he couldn't see.
Really wish that when you put it that way, it's not true.
Yeah.
It's so sad.
But that's why he sees any kind of caution as proof of a grand conspiracy.
Yeah, of course.
Sylvia Matthews Burwell is not the potential juror. But there's a further embarrassment here. And it's that the potential juror Alex has been screaming about didn't even end up making the jury.
Of course not.
He's all yelling about how she's going to be the foreperson, and she wasn't selected at all.
Of course not. If I were the judge the day after, I would have been like, well, we don't even need to have a strike.
Yeah.
Nobody needs to say anything. She's just gone.
This is all nothing, but it's potentially very dangerous for Miss Matthews Burwell. There's no journalistic merit to what Alex is doing. There's no further goal to this other than to create excuses for why his friend is probably going to jail. If he wants to create alternative realities like this, I mean, it's his right to do that. But at the point where his delusions become a danger to others, it's well worth having a discussion about how he needs to be forced to get help.
Yep.
Even if this act isn't illegal, it's the behavior of a severely mentally ill person. Alex Jones is completely unraveling in front of our eyes, largely because of the attention, support, and money that had been buffering him has been decreasing as his access to social media has gone away. Everyone around him needs to recognize that this is the path that he's on, and it does not end well. If anyone cares about him at all, I implore you, get Alex help. If you care about him in any way, I can't imagine like how you can let someone you love act like this and not step in. It's disgraceful.
It's Alex?
It's yeah. I mean, I hate to be preachy, but like this is a lunatic who is now acting in ways that we've seen the consequences of his actions in the past.
Yeah.
That has led to targeted harassment of people he's fingered for no reason. Like, we're seeing it consistently continue into the present. Mm-hmm. And I feel like everyone who has an ability to get persuade him or force him to get help that isn't doing it, I cannot possibly understand why you would act like that. He is a lunatic who is lashing out at people. But just enjoy.
You are making me feel like I'm living in Slaughterhouse 5 and I'm unstuck from time. How is it that we can just literally spend a couple of episodes talking about Alex pulling off certain behaviors in 2013 and then do a present day episode less than a week apart and he is performing those very same behaviors? That's insane. It's either that or he does it every single fucking day.
He does it a lot.
He does it a lot. That's true.
Because you have to consider that the reason that we're looking at these things in 2013 is because he's being sued for the consequences of his behavior.
It's determinative. I understand.
It's just how he operates.
I understand why we got where we are. It's just it's fucking with your head.
At a certain point, as the stakes get raised, as his behavior deteriorates in these ways, I wish him ill in the sense that I hope he feels the consequences of what he's doing. Yeah. But at the same time, like it's in everyone's best interest that he get help.
Yeah. No, I would never want all of his fantasies of like, this is what we want to do to the globalists and all that shit.
Ice picks in their eyes.
Only put more into stark relief what it is that I would like. And that's like an empathy gun.
Yeah.
I just want to fire a bullet in you that makes you feel everything that you've done to the people around you. You know?
I feel like that would be fatal. I think that Alex, I think he's probably beyond being helped, quite frankly, but that doesn't mean that that's still not the solution.
Yeah.
Trying to get him some like very serious psychological help, because he is living, you know what, if he's living in a fictional world, this bizarre overarching anti-communist conspiracy and all this bullshit, I'm not particularly all that interested in that.
Yeah.
But to the point where he's disseminating this information widely, pretending he's an expert in anything while getting everything wrong, and engaging in a gigantic media spectacle that he's trying to pull off, where he endangers people who are just private citizens.
Absolutely, yeah.
People who have no business being pointed out and targeted by him.
Yep.
Like, that is where it crosses the line to, like, every single person around him, all of his employees, his wife, everybody is complicit in this. Because there is a solution to this. There is a 5150 you can put him under. Yeah. You can call.
We'll provide material evidence.
He is a danger to others.
Yeah, he really is.
And it has nothing to do with politics.
No.
It has nothing to do with political beliefs or anything like that. No, I don't even think it has to do with his racism.
If he was saying this and it was any other president or political, if he was on the left and he's revealing jurors' fucking names in the hopes that his rabid fan base would do some very serious intimidation at best,
yeah,
then it doesn't matter if there's an ideology behind it. You're fucking crazy.
And if Alex were somebody who doesn't have that history, that very clear history of this interaction between himself and his audience, where there is harassment that goes around.
And he's very aware of it.
I would probably take it a little bit differently. Him saying a juror's name on air. Imagined juror's name on air.
Yeah.
I think it would be a little bit different. I would say, wow, that's distasteful. But I wouldn't look at it as a danger.
Mm-hmm.
This is a danger. Like, I don't think that anyone's going to kill this woman or anything like that.
Yeah.
But the yesterday, no one cared about her at all. I mean, her family did.
Yeah, yeah.
Not saying she was a worthless person.
No, no, no.
But
no.
She was not in any kind of potential.
She was a civil servant. She was just a,
I believe,
a
former civil servant.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She wasn't in any kind of potential danger from Alex's audience or dumb shitheads. Where this might get reposted on Gateway Pundit or whatever.
Right, 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 right.
She wasn't in that crosshair, and now she is.
Yep.
Alex has brought that into her life, and that is a horrible thing.
Yep.
So, I don't know. My basic point is, someone take this seriously who can do something.
Yeah.
I'm a broken record.
Yeah.
Because I've said this many times before, and every time he does stuff like this, it's like, well, this is why he needs to get help.
Well, it's not like there aren't a unending list of people who have sat astride a crazy horse and taken their cut and then let it die whenever it's, you know?
Yep.
That's a very common story among...
Yeah, great. Deal with that.
Yeah.
People.
Yeah.
There's an option. Anyway, I stress whenever I'm saying these things about, like, he needs help. I mean, he needs help.
Yeah.
I don't think that anybody should hurt him.
Absolutely not.
So Alex, he said that her husband is involved in all this stuff, too. And this is the only real evidence he provides.
Now let's show you her purported husband here. That's Stephen Burwell. And here is a photo of Stephen Burwell reportedly while she's being sworn in with Joe Biden. So he looks like Eddie Haskell on steroids, ladies and gentlemen. So... there you go. What a nice group we have ruling over us.
That's the only evidence that he provides that he's involved in the Mueller investigation.
He was in a picture with Biden?
Yeah.
Okay.
The people who are the reporters on the scene did tweet out that he is a lawyer for the Department of Justice.
Sure.
I believe it was in the National Security Division of the Department of Justice. So there is a possibility that he was involved in some small way. But I haven't been able to find any concrete evidence that ties him to any anything in particular, or that he was a player in any way. And the only evidence Alex has is that he is in a picture while she is being sworn in.
Until I get at least two or three more corroborating pieces of evidence, I'm not even going to believe this guy is even her husband. I am not, I don't believe
Alex did say purported husband.
Yeah, exactly. I don't believe he probably held up a photo of fucking Grimace. Like, this dude, I don't believe anything.
The media, though, Jordan, is trying to cover this all up.
Oh, are we?
We're not the media.
We're not the media.
Again, this is the total overthrow of rule of law. I mean, my God, the media won't even tell you that she was a high-level person with Obama and that her husband is in the whole Mueller witch hunt. I mean, we have a right to know that. It's still America, no matter what you dangerous, evil leftists say.
So Alex is saying that the media won't tell you this stuff, but at the same time, he's quoting a Reuters article that says it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand what he's... Which is it? Which is it? Is the media covering it up, or do you want to have a fucking source?
It is all.
That's bullshit.
None.
That is such bullshit.
It is everywhere.
That is deeply abusive to his audience.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
The media is covering it up, but here's a mainstream media article about it.
His audience, it's over with for them. That's abusive to me, dude.
Yeah.
I don't like having to hear that shit.
Yeah. I'm not entirely sure why I cut this clip, but I do know that there's an ad pivot in it.
Okay.
This is ridiculous. It's like having Hitler at the Nuremberg trial. Yeah, he'd be pro-Nazi. With this, God, just bring the damn gallows in there, like you said, Barnes, and hang them. So we're ending the Everything Must Go super sale. Fluoride free shipping, double Patriot points, and 40-70% off.
There's a whole lot of this on this episode. I think it's because he knows that he's trying to draw in tons more of attention.
Yeah.
You tease out the announcement of this person's
and
name.
And get as many ads
and then
in there.
Bang out the ads.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
So you might be saying that Alex said this person's name and outed them as a potential juror when he was wrong about it because he's bad at his job and he operates just knee-jerk badly, just terribly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's actually because... He's a journalist.
That really doesn't sound true to me.
And he is not a coward.
I think that's wrong.
And to me, that's not supposed to happen. We're supposed to have impartial selection of judges, supposed to be random selection, random assignment of cases.
But meanwhile, the first juror called is the former head of the Office of Budget Management, PR, the former deputy director of it. Her husband works on the Mueller probe, and we're not supposed to tell you her name. Even though there's no law, they're threatening everyone. Well, we just told you. because we're Americans, and all this kissing ass and being cowards has got us in a bad position. What made America great was doing the right thing and being strong and not being a bunch of damn cowards. We salute Robert Barnes for not being a damn coward.
I love the idea that, like, America is founded on not checking twice.
Yeah. We don't do rewrites. We're like L. Ron Hubbard. First draft, last draft, Dan.
Alex, on this show, on this sixth, he's not even addressing the fact that for the fifth, on the episode of the fifth,
yeah,
he was saying it was Jennifer Palmieri.
Yeah.
He's not even addressing, like, well, we got it wrong at first, but now here's the real person who are
what
also
what made
wrong.
America great was never admitting that you got it wrong the first time, Dan.
Yeah.
Actually, that might be true.
What actually made America great was snake oil salesmanship.
I want to slap Barnes in the face so bad. That the selection of judges is supposed to be impartial. Like, really?
Barnes.
The one thing that everybody on the right universally praises Trump for is choosing judges. Mm-hmm. They don't do it because he's choosing them for their impartiality, Barnes.
Certainly
you
not.
You fucking lying piece of shit, and you know that.
Yeah.
How dare you?
Yeah, it's pretty offensive.
That's offensive.
He's not a lawyer. I mean, technically he is, but he's not a lawyer.
I guess.
So anyway, here's another gross ad pivot.
Then of course you expose who jurors are so that they're open. Just like a judge's background or lawyer's background or the people that are there are public. But now they want it all to be secret. We're going to be talking about that a lot more in just a moment. You know, speaking of the Grim Reaper, DNA Force Plus, ladies and gentlemen, is the closest thing to what you're going to find out there that's the fountain of youth.
I'd like to point out that he was not speaking of the Grim Reaper.
Hey.
That was a little bit out of nowhere. I think he was saying that, like, these people are the bringers of death.
Right, something like that.
Yeah, it's like, whoa, that was nuts.
Speaking of the Grim Reaper.
This X3 is the fountain of youth.
I like that as a non sequitur.
Yeah, so he does a little bit of an ad for this product of his, and then he gets into talking about, like, you know, actually, the angel of death was sent by God.
Well, you know, they actually say the angel of death sent by God. The devil doesn't control the angel of death. And, you know, if you put the red blood of the lambs there, I guess it's Passover, that the angel of death will pass over your house when it goes after Pharaoh and the corrupt establishment that was about to be dealt with by God because Pharaoh was demanding the firstborn son of every Israelite as a Molochian sacrifice. So there wouldn't be leadership. There wouldn't be anyone to resist the crown. The boys were attacked by drag queen story time and the Prozac and the Ritalin and the attack on boys. As was in the past, as is again today, things just repeat themselves as above, so below. But seriously, DNA Force Plus.
Wow.
Back in stock. 50%.
Wow. Whoa. I think my eye is bleeding from that punch.
Yeah, that's Jesus. That was pretty impressive.
Oh God, yeah. Cut me.
A lot of weird salesmanship going on here.
That was just free association. That wasn't even, I don't know what the old man.
So Alex has Owen Schroyer in DC covering Roger's case.
Sure, of
so
course.
He's on the scene.
He's got the big guns. He's got the talent over there.
If anything made me laugh my ass off, it's probably this next clip because Owen's out there doing a man on the street thing, trying to talk about how Roger's, you know, like it's unfair what they're doing to Roger. Mic down for this because you got it. Oh God, I love this.
The real lawlessness is this show trial. That's the lawlessness. Not Alex Jones reporting on a juror. That's nothing. That's free speech. That's truth. So this is kind of like the Tommy Robinson thing. Here, come here and say that, sir. Come say that to my face, you coward. You're a coward. Get out of here, you fascist coward. You Nazi. You're a Nazi coward. Get out of America, you Nazi coward. Yeah, you won't come talk to me, you punk. Get out of my face. Sorry, Alex. You had a guy shouting me down out here. Punk coward.
I find that to be so hilarious. Owen Schroyer's in the middle of trying to do a remote, and he gets into a fight with a guy.
Man, you know, that's another one of those situations where it's like every time Alex swears and he really goes for it, and you're like, you don't know how to do this, man. What are you doing? Owen does not know how to get into a fight with somebody.
It doesn't sound like
that. That is weird.
Yeah, it's very stilted.
That's robotic.
Yeah, yeah. So the other problem is that he's also very stupid.
Yes.
Owen Schroyer is very dumb.
He knows two insults, punk
and coward.
And Nazi and fascist.
I don't think he thinks those are insults, though.
So he's trying to talk about the juror situation and how them having her as a jury member means the whole case is fucked. And he is highlighting a fundamental misunderstanding of how the legal system works.
Jury process. Every member of the jury could sit here and be like, yep, Stone was railroaded. This is a show trial. This was a rig job, kangaroo court. But they've got the one juror. That's all they need. They now control the entire thing. They control the judge. They control the defense with the Democrat lawyers. Now they control the jury results. I mean, they literally have every angle covered now.
So the first important point here is that this woman was not put on the jury. So she's not even there for the trial.
Now they have even more control, Dan.
Owen's premise fails there, just right off the bat.
Man.
But he's also failing on a basic understanding of how our legal system works. The argument he's trying to make is that because there's one person on the jury who's going to vote that Roger is guilty no matter what, even if everyone else says not guilty, Roger won't get justice. This demonstrates a startling lack of understanding of the topic that he's covering. While it is true that one person being skewed toward the defense could fuck up a prosecution, that is true. The same is not true in the reverse, because our courts are based on the presumption of innocence until proven guilty. If everyone but this one juror voted not guilty, Roger could not be convicted. A unanimous decision is required to convict. So if the jury reached an impasse where this one globalist plant juror wouldn't budge, it would end in a mistrial. And then the state would either have to decide to drop charges or if they wanted to retry the case. In no way could one guilty vote result in a conviction in the way that one not guilty vote would preclude a conviction. Seriously, Owen Schroyer doesn't have the basic understanding that's required to have these sorts of conversations, and he's putting this idea forth while trying to correct an allegedly very competent lawyer. You heard him at the beginning saying, yeah. Bob, Bob, Bob.
Yeah.
He's talking to Robert Barnes, who's supposedly a lawyer. These people have a lot of feelings about what's happening in the world, and I guess they're entitled to those feelings. But they are just not equipped to have the adult conversations they're trying to have about actual topics.
I mean, that's bananas.
Yeah, it's very...
When he said now that they have one juror, they have the whole thing, I was searching for something like maybe he thinks that there's like a, that it's like there's a swing vote, you know, and
no.
They have like no.
He has no idea.
He's talking about a hung jury and a mistrial.
Yes.
And he just has no idea how it actually works.
Well, what he's imagining is the stories that you hear of people who, like, you know, 11 of the jurors say guilty, and one says not guilty, and therefore you can't convict. He's reflecting that. He's taking the opposite of that and imagining that it has the same sort of outcome.
Yeah, no, his idea is essentially... hearing about 12 Angry Men. I doubt he's seen it.
Well, it's also, he's assuming that, like, okay, let's say there's a mistrial, then that default means Roger's guilty, and it's not. It's ridiculous. So anyway, we have one last clip here, Jordan, and Alex has made a big spectacle of this. He's said definitively that he knows who the juror is, even though he was wrong the day before, and he's also wrong again. And so it makes it really sad when he ends the episode like this, sort of waffling a little bit while still being hyper confident.
InfoWars releases name of Obama official chosen for Roger Stone jury.
Wasn't chosen.
And it turns out she headed up Health and Human Services on top of it. So
what?
This is the only woman that was ever in that position that Politico and the Washington Post reported as the head spokesperson for Office of Budget and Management.
Nope.
And the only woman who had a husband in the Justice Department working in the Mueller probe. Nobody else will release it. That appears to be who it is with about 99% probability.
99% probability. Why are you leaving that 1% dangling there, Alex? Why is it always that the 1% ends up being right?
The process of elimination, Dan, and as Nate Silver and 538 have told us, I don't know what they say.
You can't operate like this. You can't. You just can't. You can't do these sorts of things with bullshit process of elimination, misunderstanding various job titles in order to make this fit whatever you want to do. You just can't do the shit like this. I guess you can, but you should...
And you can be rewarded for it.
Right.
Don't forget about that part.
It's just staggering to me, the extent to which he's wrong.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. Every single time, he's like, I'm 99% on this. There's a 1% chance this was a real attack.
And it's always the 1%.
It's always.
It's always the 1%.
Whatever chance. That tiny percent he has that he might be wrong is always.
I think we're just experiencing Alex in the wrong multiverse for him.
It must be.
Like, in 99% of the multiverses, obviously he's correct about everything.
Yeah.
It just so happens that you and I exist in the one where he's always wrong.
I mean, if that's the case.
Isn't that crazy?
Tragic for him.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, I come to the end of this episode, and what I'm left with is an overwhelming sense of sadness.
Yeah.
I am sad because Alex is clearly diving deeper into the overt white nationalist, white supremacist leanings that he has, as demonstrated in that coverage of the New Hampshire couple story where he's saying that you're allowed to do this because you're brown and white people need to get guns and get ready to shoot people. Like, that's really fucked up.
Yeah, very.
The extent to which he's saying that his enemies need to be wiped off the earth, not just murdered with ice picks. A street lobotomy.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sad about that. That makes me really bummed out. I really think that the world's better without rhetoric like that.
Maybe.
And then I'm really sad about this desperate, pathetic attempt to out this juror.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's a pathetic attempt. I think it's very sad. He's demonstrating, if anything, his inability to research, the incompetence of his team, the sloppiness of his legal advisors who were just like, yeah, go do this. This is your duty to do this.
Yeah, yeah.
I just, it's a bummer. It's a bummer. And further, it's transparent. Like, as soon as I got through listening to these episodes, it was so fucking clear to me that this is the behavior of someone who knows that Roger is probably going to be found guilty.
Oh, he's the most guilty.
This is a behavior to invalidate the trial before it begins.
Yeah.
Because that's what you got to do to protect whatever connection you have to him.
Yeah.
And that's not empathy.
Yeah.
I think that when people cover stuff like this, it would be wise to understand that that is the motive that Alex has. It is possible that there is also a motive of trying to intimidate this juror, tamper with the jury. It is possible that that is somewhere within his mind. That is possible. And it's also further possible that that will be the real-world consequence of this.
Yeah.
And it's not probably wise to ignore that. I'm not advocating people ignore that. But it would be wise for people to lead any kind of story about this with why Alex is doing this is because, like, lay out the connections to InfoWars that are very clearly part of the Roger Stone case.
Yeah.
And be like, Alex needs preemptive justification for when his friend is probably found guilty.
To continue the perception v reality conversation, I would guarantee that Alex would never say, or doesn't believe, like, in his perception, he's like, I am not trying to tamper with anybody. I'm not trying to intimidate anybody. I truly believe that I am doing my best to help these people, and I'm trying to invalidate the trial before it happens. I'm not trying to hurt anybody, but I'm totally trying
to invalidate the trial because the trial is just a kangaroo court anyway.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I mean, Alex's perception of what he did when he was super drunk and screaming about $1 million bounty on the opposing counsel in his Sandy Hook case, he doesn't think that is intimidation or...
And yet the reality is different.
Right.
Yeah.
So it all comes back to that.
Yep.
Alex's lead story on the 5th is damning for him.
I know.
Because reality does exist.
Every time he's like, I've got something really valuable and important to say. I've looked deep in the mirror and I see that everything that I do is wrong and I'm going to express that to you as me being right.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, Jesus. All right, man.
Yep. Good luck, Alex.
Yeah.
So we'll be back on Monday. But until then, we have a website.
We do. It's knowledgefight.com.
Yep. We're also on Twitter.
We are on Twitter. It's @knowledge_fight.
We're also
@ GoToBedJordan. We are also on Facebook. And if you'd like to download the show, please go to iTunes, download, leave a review, etc. Go to other podcast apps, tell your friends. We love it.
Yep. We'll be back. But until then, I'm Neo. I'm Leo. I'm DZX Clark. I'm the director of Office of Management and Budget.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.